Blog Talk Radio.
The only station that is all Bama, all the time. Bams Radio.
Inimitable. I have to come up with a good adjective for you every week, Kerry. The inimitable Kerry Clark, and of course, the deacon of the Church of College Football, Rock Watts from Mobile, Alabama. Guys, how are you?
Doing great, man. How about you?
Couldn't be finer. Had a bowl of chili for dinner, and you're probably in trouble during this broadcast.
It was so glad I'm in Mobile.
You don't want to be in the studio in probably 45 minutes, Thomas. Anyway, interesting week. We've got the Honey Drippers, the Black Bears from Ole Miss coming into Bryant-Denny this weekend. I think it's a mildly interesting contest, and of course we want to talk about that. We have got some recruiting information we want to drop on you guys. We will enjoy kind of talking about some of the people that we're looking at and talking about Derrick Henry, what we've heard about him, and of course the unfortunate incident of the young man down in Pensacola.
Spanish Fort,
yeah. It looks like he has put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. Later in the show, we've got Bandit Ref coming on with us to talk about his charity cause for one of our favorite people, the Bama Dog, Jamie, the Fire Gene Chizik pool that you can get in on and basically try to come up with, predict the date and the time when they will let Mr. Chizik go. Of course, all in fun and good spirit from the Bama side. Then later in the show this evening, we've got Paul Tripoli, who was a former Bama player for Bear Bryant, played on the last team, or Bryant's last team, in the Liberty Bowl, and he's going to share some insight into that team and into coach that I know you don't want to miss. So, you know what? Let's kick it off, guys. Kerry, I'm going to let you start blasting into some of the stuff you found out this week. And by the way, that is one absolutely gorgeous shirt. Is that your work shirt?
It's one of them.
Kerry is sitting. He is resplendent this evening, folks, in a Hawaiian shirt that's got pink palm trees on it. I'm looking to see if you've got flamingos. I don't see a flamingo, but it's got, you know, this is absolutely gorgeous, and he is looks like a bouquet of tropical flowers sitting in the BAMS radio studio right now. He's giving me the evil eye as well.
No, it's fine. This is my coat of many colors. Shout out to Joseph from the Old Testament.
I got you.
I just hope that my BAMS radio brothers don't do me like his brothers did him.
I'm not throwing you in any fires. I'm not, you know, going to stick you any place that you don't need to be. And no, you're happy hearing it because I'm happy. You're happy, so we're all happy.
All right. So what did I find out this week about the team? You want to start with the team?
Let's start with the team.
Well, there are some injuries to discuss. It looks very much like backup nose guard Brandon Irie will not play this week due to a pretty badly sprained ankle he suffered last week. This means more playing time for true freshman Darren Lake out of Sumter County. Darren's been kind of worked in slowly. This week he got the snaps with the big boys.
And he looks good, though. He's looked good when he's been on the field, guys.
He's a freak. You don't want to compare anybody to Cody, but if I had seen Cody play his freshman year at 18 years old, I think this is about what I would have seen. So, yeah, shout-out to Darren Lake. Going to get a lot more snaps this time. Anytime Jesse Williams gets a blow and they're in the base defense, you're going to see Darren and not Ivory. Now, Kevin Norwood barely played. He made the participation chart, but he barely played this past week in the victory over Florida Atlantic. He's also had a little bit of a leg injury. He has been used judiciously, sparingly in practice this week. However, as the week has gone on, Kevin's repetitions have increased to the point that he's probably going to play some Saturday, but I can assure you, once Bama gets up, and I think they will, by 14 or 21, we'll say 21, I'm pretty sure they'll probably yank him then and save him. And he will be, Kevin and Brandon both will be huge beneficiaries of the bye week next week between Ole Miss and Missouri. So the bye will come at a good time for those two young men. Other interesting notes about the team. There's an article going up tonight on TideSports.com by Chase Goodbread where he interviews Archie Manning about A.J. McCarron. Should be a very interesting read. I often thought when A.J. was coming out of high school that he reminded me a lot of a young Eli Manning, so I'll be interesting to see what his dad has to say about that. The running back situation continues to be interesting. Eddie Lacy had an excellent game. I know he had more touchdowns. Of course, he didn't have any touchdowns last week. But I know he had the three touchdowns against Arkansas, but he had more rushing yards this past week. Eddie seems to be coming around. We talked to some of his offensive linemen in the locker room after the game, and they all, to a man, including A.J., not just offensive linemen, they were all impressed by the way that Eddie Lacy played this past week. The spin move is back, the circle button. For those of you that play video games, I don't, but I understand that's one of the moves you can do. So shout out to Eddie Lacy. And also a shout out to Kenny Bell, who caught that pass at the beginning of the game and turned up, and he was vapor. Yes, I'm auditioning for a future play-by-play job. But anyway, Kenny Bell, great game. But there's really not anything bad to report right now about members of the current team. We will certainly get into the legal ramifications of things going on down in Baldwin County regarding the recruit later in the show. But, yeah, that's pretty much what's going on with the team right now. What do you guys have?
You missed the Sunday night show, which, by the way, we thoroughly missed you on Sunday night. But one of the things we brought up, Kerry, was that in watching the game twice now, seeing it in the stadium and then again on CSS as a replay, is that we were basically taking what they were giving us as far as the zone pass across the middle. Basically, they were lining up to stop the run, and we were just dumping off the middle. And that's where you were making the comment about Kenny Bell. You know, he took it in the flat, and off he went, just on a crossing route. And they seemed like to give that to us all day. And the other thing that impressed me was that as we would capitalize on what they would give us from a defensive perspective, I loved all the running backs. I can't help but be, again, impressed with the second and third effort these guys were giving after they'd get hit once, twice, sometimes three times, and then carry three guys up the field another 2 or 3 yards every time they touched the ball. And that was DeHart, that was Yeldon, Lacy, Kenyon Drake. Every single one of them was able to. And I made the comment on the Sunday night show that Burton Burns may be one of the biggest unsung heroes on the Alabama coaching staff, because every year we keep churning out great running backs, and a lot of it's God-given, but I'm telling you, I think Burton is coaching a lot of stuff into them. Kerry, what do you think?
Well, Burton expects his backs, just like back in the day when we had Ivy Williams, he expects his backs to be complete football players. Running the ball is all great and fine. You've got to be able to do that. But you also have to be able to pick up the blitz. You have to be able to run the little screen pass routes and the little back out of the backfield routes against linebackers. You're right. Burton does a great job. And you mentioned everybody that carried the ball except one. I got to give a shout out to number 34, Ben Howell. Not only did Ben get in at the end of the game, Bird, but you know what? And this is the first time I've noticed this. He was on the punt return team, number 34, on the front line the whole game. At first I thought it might have been Hunter Bush, and I actually tweeted that erroneously. But come the participation chart, God love it, it was Ben. Ben is on the punt return team, the first punt return team, number 3. This guy, I'm telling you, this guy is our Rudy. Ben got lit up like a Christmas tree 3 springs ago when Jalston Fowler was a true freshman still playing linebacker. Ben caught a pass out of the backfield. He was a walk-on. He was just in there for garbage time at the time. And Fowler was playing linebacker at the time, and he hit Ben so hard, I really don't know how Ben got up. But Ben is a fine young man. He's an active member of the college group at Calvary Baptist in Tuscaloosa. He's from Gordo, Alabama, so he's right there in West Alabama. And he's finally getting some playing time. And you know, this is Ben's at least fourth year with the program, possibly fifth. But he's been out, this is at least his fourth year. And to see him out there on the first punt return team, it just, I mean, it warms my heart, man, because I tell you, my high school coach treated me about like a walk-on. So I can empathize. I can empathize with all of Alabama's walk-ons. And when one of them gets in there and makes a name, and Ben's going to get a legitimate Alabama letter this year. Something he'll be able to treasure the rest of his life. And I just love those kind of stories.
I'm with you. I think that's terrific, and it's a little bit like Lowry, because Lowry was the same thing. Lowry played his way up into a starting role in the secondary, and, you know, Howell, is, he comes in and he performs. I mean, he's running the ball well. He's playing great on special teams. What can you say? He's played his way.
I'm going to tell you a funny story about Lowry, if you just indulge me for 60 seconds.
Sure.
There was some consternation and some concern among the defensive coaches as to how quickly the young safeties were going to pick up the defense this year. And when I say young, I mean freshmen and redshirt freshmen. I don't even think they want this out there, and I don't think anybody will even admit it, but I have it from a very good source that, and this did not come to fruition, but Will could have played one more year. And he had a bad injury. There was actually some talk in the football building of trying to convince him to come out and maybe get himself into shape and start playing in October. It didn't happen, but it was discussed, trust me, from a very good source.
No kidding.
It didn't happen because, you know, I really don't think Will wanted to put himself through all that again.
No.
He went out on top last year with a ring, and even though he was injured for the last few games, he was still with the team every step of the way. And he's a great story. Will, you know, I probably should talk a little more every now and then about these games I cover on Friday nights.
Where right.
I call, the column I call Friday Night Lights for BamaMag.com. Will was a guy that I wrote about in high school for 3 years. I never thought he'd end up as a walk-on at Alabama. I thought he'd sign somewhere like Livingston or North Alabama or Troy or Jacksonville. But he went down to Alabama as a walk-on and made the team and was a contributor and a starter in the nickel package.
Yes.
But stories like that, I mean, you know, but you know, Ben Howell is even more of a Rudy than Will, because Will was out there for 2 years on a lot of meaningful plays. Ben is finally getting on the field now as a fourth or fifth year guy. And I just love those kind of stories. And my man Renzel Watkins made an appearance the other day too, late in the game. Brent Callaway has been fighting some injuries. So when you see late in the game a number 21 go in on the kickoff team or whatever, that's Renzel Watkins, another fourth or fifth year walk-on from Charlotte. He made a tackle at the end of the Florida Atlantic game that erupted the sidelines, got everybody fired up. So I'd love to be able to come on here and share these stories about Alabama's walk-ons.
Well, it's, you know what, it just shows that it's not always the five-star kids that are going to get out on the field. You know, it's heart determination and all that corny stuff like the Rudy movie portrayed. But you know what? I'm all about some corny. I mean, we live in such a crummy world that it's fun to watch a kid go on, walk onto the team, and then not just be a cannon fodder, you know, during the week, and that he actually gets some significant time, either on special teams or like Lowry did, played himself into on a nickel package, a starting role, or a contributor or significant contributor to everything that went on out there. So a lot of fun.
And it's good that we're talking about walk-ons, because our guest at 8:30 was a walk-on at Alabama, Paul Tripoli. He worked himself into the playing rotation. When he got to Tuscaloosa, he didn't have a scholarship.
Right.
He earned one later on. And I'm going to give one more shout-out to a walk-on on the current team. They call him White Lightning because he's one of the fastest kids on the team. He doesn't play a whole lot, but at the end of the game, or when the game is out of hand, it was third quarter against Arkansas, but when the games are out of hand, they put the backup offense. Check out number 24, wide receiver Nathan McAllister, who was an excellent high school player up in Russellville. Nathan runs like a 4.4, and he's a Caucasian, and his teammates call him White Lightning. This is a true story. He challenged Marquise Mays to a race in the 40 in front of the whole team a couple years ago, and Mays wouldn't take him up on it. So that tells you that this guy is pretty fast. So a lot of speed, a guy who's been out there and paid his dues. He's gone through all those tough fourth-quarter all-season conditioning programs with Scott Cochran, and now Nathan McAllister's getting a little love at wide receiver, so shout out to him.
Very cool. Well, you know what? We're going to take a real quick break. We have got our Monday night or Wednesday night rolling. I don't even know what night it is, Kerry. Thomas, you still out there?
Oh, yeah. Just doing work in the background, listening to stories. Good times.
Yeah, okay. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. You're listening to BAM's radio this evening. And we will be right back, and hopefully we'll have Bandit Ref calling in with a little bit of an update on some interesting things he's got going on.
63, boys.
We begin the fourth quarter.
Hey, it's crunch time.
Just the last 15 minutes.
You wanna be a champ?
This is what you gotta finish.
You know we out to win it,
so we gon' go harder.
This is Alabama,
home of the fourth quarter.
Now put your foes in the air.
Yeah.
Now put 'em up.
Now put your foes in the air.
Yeah.
Now put 'em up.
Now put your foes in the air.
Yeah.
Now put 'em up.
Hey,
Alabama,
home of the fourth quarter.
Sweet home Alabama. I'm still reppin'. We aiming for that crystal ball. You can have second. We got them jumping bandwagon since we gave them hell. That trophy case too small.
We need another shell.
Boy, what a team. We making history. Yeah, we got 13. Call us Lord of the Rings. Say we got them going. See that offense flying by. And plus, we got the D to make the Superman cry.
We in the game, Bama. So let's go on to give them hell. Our time is here. We going further than the previous year. I think it's time to hush the critics that's been mouthing. I'm finna hit them in the mouth with some EA you don't be talking about. Let's roll on them. That beat and run, let's throw up on them. Since we landed saving in T-Town, it's hard to go unnoticed. Back to the days of welfare grinding, all the drill them in. The seasons that are in, now we on top of the
game. It's crunch time.
Just the last 15 minutes.
You wanna be a champ?
This is what you gotta finish.
You know we out to win it,
so we gon' go harder.
This is Alabama,
home of the fourth quarter.
All right, man. You know what? I love the 63 boys. My good friend Jay Truth has just set up a new studio down in Tuscaloosa. He is rocking a great new business, a great guy. Good friend of BAM's, good friend of, I mean, huge Alabama fan, the 63 boys are. Looking for all the new music coming out with those guys. In fact, hopefully we'll get Jay Truth on the show in the near future. But right now, we have got the illustrious illustrator Bandit Ref on with us. Hey, Bandit, what's up, brother?
How you guys doing? You guys doing all right?
Yeah, we're doing good, man. It's fall, and
awesome.
We got the football feel in the air, and we're about to wade into the SEC action against a hated rival from over in Oxford, Mississippi, our Ole Miss Black Bears from whatever.
Yeah. You got to treat every SEC opponent like they're a real enemy.
They all are.
I mean, you know, ask LSU. Ask LSU. gotta treat them like they're the real deal.
Hey, so. Man, King Crimson gave me a heads up last week that you and the King had a project you were working on a subject that's near and dear to my heart with my good friend Jamie Davis, also known as Bama Dog. Can you fill us in on what you're doing? Because not only is it fun, but it's funny, and it sounds like you've taken some heat from the good folks down on the plane. So give us an update, Ref.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. All right, well, let's start at the beginning. We all know that Gene Chizik may be going to experience a new and dynamic occupational shift in the near future. he may or may not be the coach at Auburn much longer. I mean, 1-3, and you can talk moral victories all day long from last week, but, you know, they lose a couple more, and all that moral victory stuff's going to go out the window.
Absolutely.
And so what we decided to do, you know, I really, as most of my good ideas, it comes from King. And King said, hey, you know, what about a pool? Why don't we do some sort of pool? And then so we started putting together the pool to get Gene Chizik, you know, you pick a day and a time. and you let me know what time and day you want, and we put together a pool and see who can guess closest to the time they fire Gene Chizik. And I think what makes it especially fun this year is because, you know, Auburn is obviously going to get involved in the race for Bobby Petrino, I think. And so the first team to fire their coach, whether it's Kentucky, Tennessee, or Auburn, is probably going to win that race, at least for this year. So there's a lot of fun things that play into it. And the way you enter the pool is you make a donation to Janie's fund, and that's to help her fight cancer. She's a single mom. She's a wonderful person. She's an awesome Bama fan. It's just a great cause, and you make just, you know, if you can only make a dollar donation, that's fine. Make a dollar donation. Make five, make 20, whatever you can do. It doesn't matter. There's no, it has to be $100 or $50 or whatever. And you make a donation. You email me at banditref@gmail.com. Tell me you made a donation, and I'll get your date and time from you and get you in the pool. And the person who guesses closest to the correct time is going to win a social media package from King Crimson and I, which is, you know, I'll do a caricature and we'll set you up with a custom Twitter logo and a Facebook cover page and all the bells and whistles that go with it. So
fun.
Should
stuff.
Be a lot of fun. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
And have, you know, I saw some of the response that you've gotten from the Auburn guys. Do you want to share any of that with us, Ref?
Yeah, they're not real thrilled with me. Which they already thought that I was just left of Attila the Hun. You know, they were not. I didn't have any Auburn fans to start with, but you know, they're definitely not thrilled with this. They seem to get the impression that we're somehow using Jamie's cancer to promote our hate for Auburn. And what I've been trying to explain to them is, you know, I would still hate Auburn and I would still run the pool and I would still make fun of them without the charity part. The
right.
charity part's just an add-on to do something good with it, but I would still be making fun of them. That's not going to change anything.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so, and they don't really care for that response much either. So I've got a little blowback. There's a very special gentleman from Auburn who's been emailing me, and it's been
Mr. Anonymous?
We've had some. His name is Dale.
Yeah.
He's an Auburn fan. He's been emailing me, and you can go to my website and see the conversation. I won't repeat any of it here because it is it's very grown-up subject matter. He has a colorful vocabulary. He really does.
Ref, what's it? So, remind us what the website is. Give us the URL again.
It's banditref.com.
Okay. Banditref.com.
banditref.com. Right.
I'm about to put
That's
the
right.
link in the and, chat.
Yeah, you can find the, and from there too, the Gene Chizik firing pool is on there. I encourage everybody, like I said, if you can give a dollar to Jamie, that's $1 closer to covering the cost of her medications, which are outrageously expensive. So
and she's got
every
crappy,
little bit
help. crappy insurance, folks. I know
that's
what
right.
kind of insurance she has, and it is just not good stuff. So
mm-hmm.
hopefully this is something that will help basically move some money toward her that she just could really, really, really use. And, again, a great Bama fan. Going through a little bit of a tough time physically right now. I mean, she's coming, you know, trying to get ready for chemo, has had to go back in for another procedure surgically. I know the doctor is not going to let her actually go in for the chemo until her body is stronger. So she's, you know, it's a little bit of an uphill battle, folks. Like Ref says, it's very expensive. Anytime you're going through the level of cancer care that she's having to go through, it's not easy. It's expensive. And for God's sakes, let's rally around the flag for one of our own. So, again, that's www.banditref.com. All you have to do is – now, how can they make a donation? What's the easiest way to do that? Because I noticed
If you go to banditref.com, you go to the Gene Chizik firing pool, there's the link on there so you can go directly to her page, make
Great.
The donation directly to her.
Great.
And then just shoot me an email and let me know you made a donation. You don't have to tell me how much. Just shoot me an email, let me know you made one, and let me know what your preferred date and time is for the pool. So, should be exciting.
Well,
should be a fun season. Okay.
It's good tongue-in-cheek stuff, and it's all in Bama fun. I don't know that the OBS are taking they may be taking some umbrage to it, but that's okay, too. Anyway.
I give a lot of hits on my website from the Never to Yield Foundation, which is always exciting.
Yeah,
that guarantees good hate mail. That really does.
It does. I've got to watch some of it, and I feel very honored that you have lumped me in with all that, so that's great.
Awesome.
Man, thank you so much for doing that. And again, it's just to let listeners know they're not using this as a fulcrum, to engender people to go to the thing. It's basically the Jamie portion of it. They would have they're doing it simply because she's a friend, and they would have done it anyway. And this is a way that we can maybe raise a little bit more money to really help a good person out. That's having a tough time with both financially and the disease. So kudos to you, brother. Many thanks. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide, Carrie. And, keep up the great work on BAMS. I'm listening. So.
We're having a big
time.
Guys.
That's it. All right, guys. Y'all take it easy.
Later, ref.
Bye.
Well, through our little network of folks, you know, it's been fun, guys, to watch people step up and again, this was a collaborative effort between King Crimson and Bandit Ref, and they clued me in earlier in the week. And again, one of the things that we want to do on BAMS is be an outreach for players, for ex-players, for the Bama faithful, the fans that both long-suffering and near-suffering fans within the best folks on the planet who are the Alabama people. So. I got to tell you personally, you know, I don't know anybody better in my life than the guys that I get to, and ladies, I'm so sorry for the ladies and gentlemen that I get to share time with when I either go to the game with them or sit in the tent, watch it on the big screen, or come over to the birdcage and hang out in the cage, man. So just special folks, thank you, as always, for your support. For people like this and for situations like this. And quite frankly, Auburn, you can kiss my ass. So, Thomas, what you got for us? We're about to come up on break, and I'm about to run over here and give Carrie a hug in his shirt.
Well, you have fun doing that. One thing you mentioned, special folks, you know, folks that have had interaction on this show. I believe Robert from Iowa will be down this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll call in at some point, but definitely somebody, if you want to meet and greet him, he'll be around.
Now, I'm not doing the tailgate. Now, if you guys want to take the tailgate down, I'm going to be scoping out the Georgia-Tennessee game. I'll be in Athens this week. So there's no way I can get from Athens back down to Bryant-Denny by the time we kick off at 8:30 or something like that on Saturday night. So just to let you guys know, I won't be there. Now, the Shelby County guys will be glad to host them in the Shelby County tent, and we can make sure he's taken care of there. And so the Shelby County Alumni Tent, if you're not familiar with where BAM sets up for the games, is right there on University, sort of facing the quad, cat a corner to Denny Chimes, on the lot right next to the President's Mansion in front of, I think it's Little Hall. Is that right, Kerry?
Yes.
Yeah. So we're right there by Little Hall, right on University. And, again, you'll see a big blow-up tent that says Shelby County Alumni Group. And we'll make sure that if you want to come down and say hi to Robert from Iowa, then that's a perfect opportunity to get to shake his hand. And if you're a lady, promised him lots of lipstick, so paint up the lips and go ahead and just color him rouge.
I'm going to wear my special cologne for him. A couple of quick hitters off of Twitter before we go to break. Congratulations to the University of Auburn. They made history this month, Thomas and Berg. They are the first team in history to be in seventh place in the SEC West. Wiggle, wiggle to them. And one more quick thing, and Thomas will cover this more later when he breaks down Ole Miss, but Ole Miss quarterback Bo Wallace returned to practice today. He will likely make the start. He's been fighting some injuries, but he will likely make the start. So, unfortunately for us, we won't quite see as much of Barry Brunetti as I would like to have, but I'm still
love Barry Brunetti.
I'd like to see him get in there, man.
Here's the thing.
He's brutal.
Vinny Sinceri hitting Barry Brunetti, and I mean, we're talking spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking the Italian. I mean, this is like the you know, the tricolore, red, white, and green, baby.
And I'd like to invite everybody to go over to BamaMag.com. Mike Coppage of Scout.com is about to post some information about a top 2014 Louisiana prospect who could get an offer from Bama in the near future. And very lastly, before break, Cole Kubelik, a well-known Aub, who I'm not a huge fan of because he screams his questions at media days, but Cole Kubelik posted this interesting thing on Twitter. He spoke to an assistant coach who has prepared for Alabama this year, and that coach told him it's not the most talented defense that Saban has had, but by far it is the most fundamentally sound and mistake-free defense Saban has had. And if last year's Alabama defense was this sound, they may have shut out everybody they played. So that's what an opposing coach told Cole Kubelik, a radio commentator in North Alabama, former Auburn player, and a man who screams his questions at SEC Media Days every day.
Wow. Well, listen, look, we're gonna hop off to break, and Thomas, if you can, see if you can get our guest for the second half hour dialed in, Mr. Paul Tripoli. And we'll just hang loose while you're doing that. And Thomas as well, we've got a caller on hold. Give us a heads up on who that might be. And you're listening to BAMS Radio. Having fun already? And we will be right back after this break.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
Guests from regional University of Alabama alumni chapters on BAMS Radio are sponsored each week by Sunbelt Inflatable Tents. For family tailgating, tent rental, school or church events, or business promotion, we have the perfect size tent. Visit sunbeltinflatabletents.com.
Summertime talk sizzles on BAMS with Bird, Blip, Thomas Watts, Laura McKeeman, and other special guests.
Welcome back to BAMS. We are thrilled to welcome Mr. Paul Tripoli from down in the Pensacola area. Paul, how are you this evening? Welcome to BAMS.
Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you, Greg?
Oh, man, doing awesome. We're having a fun time already this evening, and really honored to have you on the show. First of which, you know, you're a former Bama football player. I think everybody knows that, but kind of give us an update on what you're up to right now.
Well, I do a sports talk local sports talk radio show on ESPN, 1450 ESPN radio here in Pensacola, and I concentrate on the local scene and you know, I do have an Alabama tradition segment on there, but I concentrate on the local high schools and the kids from this area that have excelled, you know, have overcome adversity and made it in college and the pros. So then I have coaches on and do interviews. I do that, and then I've been coaching at Catholic High School for 8 years now. I coach the defensive backs. And we're having a good year. We're 4-0, so kids are doing well.
Awesome. And what's the name of the show, and how can people listen to it? Because I do know that you stream that.
Yeah, we do. Yep, ESPNPensacola.com.
Okay.
And, so we stream it live. It's on Saturday morning, 7 to 9. It's on 1450 a.m. Pensacola here, and we're negotiating to get an FM channel. So, yeah, things are exploding there. It's a ton of fun. And so I've been doing that, and I went back to school last year, and after 8 years of being assistant coach, I'm getting my teacher cert, so I'm looking to be a head coach somewhere.
Awesome, man. It's I got to meet Paul at the one of the alumni group dinners or booster group dinners down in Pensacola, and had the pleasure of meeting he and his wife along with another couple of friends, and during the dinner I was made aware that he had played football for the Bear and was actually on that last team. Now we had talked about walk-ons. I don't know if you listened to the earlier part of the show, Paul, but we've been discussing walk-ons and the impact they've made on Alabama teams, and one this year, and of course Will Lowry, who was a walk-on, has done did a great job for Alabama. Weren't you a walk-on down there?
I was a walk-on in 1980. Was my freshman year, and I played in upstate New York. I went to a high school called Liverpool High School. We have 4,000 kids in the high school, and my sophomore year we had a losing program for quite a few years, and George O'Leary came up from Long Island in my sophomore year and really turned our program around instantly. After the first year, we went 19-1 my last 2 years there. But George, we just outworked everybody. We'd go in the weight room at 5:30 every day in the off season and go in there and lift weights like it was serious business. And, we ended up being undefeated my senior year. Gave up 33 points my whole senior year on defense. So he went right up to Syracuse and became the defensive line coach there. And a couple of my teammates went up there. But I didn't get any scholarship offers. So a friend of mine from upstate New York walked down to Alabama in the early 80s and had some meetings and conversations with Coach Bryant. And he talked me into going down there. So I went down there. Didn't know a single person. I didn't even know where Tuscaloosa was on the map. I got off the plane, I thought it was 8 miles from the sun. It was so hot down there. So anyway, I went down there and ended up playing on the JV squad my freshman year and got redshirted my second year. So I was going into my third year, and I was back home in upstate New York working in a freezer on the night shift because I had to make money for school. My parents just put three boys through school. So, I got a phone call from Ken Donahue, who was recently inducted in the College Hall of Fame, Coaches Hall of Fame a couple years ago. And he called me up and said, Paul, we don't have any room in Bryant Hall for you this year. You're going to have to move out. We've got a lot of scholarship freshmen coming in. Well, I thought to myself, God, I practiced for 2.5 years, over 230 practices, and I never got to dress for a game. I was like, I don't think they have any plans for me, But I met my first wife down there, so I said, I'm going to go back down to school and just, go out and kind of go through the motions. And I didn't realize it, but first practice, the team manager comes in, taps me on the shoulder and says, Coach Bryant wants to see you. Now
this is in your third year, right?
Okay. My third year, right. Now, for your listeners out there, you got to know this. What separated Coach Bryant from most all other coaches was he could measure a player's heart and he could read his psyche, his state of mind. I'll give you an example. When I was told to move out of the athletic dorm out of Bryant Hall, and then I got that tap on the shoulder to go see Coach Bryant, I was terrified. Everybody was scared of Coach Bryant. He was the greatest coach that ever lived with 6 national titles, and I was wondering, he's going to cut me, that's it. My career's over. I know I can play here deep down, but, I'm just, I don't know what he wants to talk to me about. So I go up there, and I sit across from him, and Greg, he says 3 sentences to me, and he changes my life and my football career, those 3 sentences. The first sentence, he says, Paul, he says, did you find a place to stay? And I was kind of taken back because, here I was, just a peon walk-on from upstate New York, a Yankee walk-on, so I had 2 strikes against me. he said, and I was taken back, and I said, oh, yes, sir, I've got an off-campus apartment. But I didn't even know that he knew I was out of the dorm or in the dorm or anything. And then he looks at me and says, well, I hope this doesn't affect the way you play on the field.
Wow.
And I was sitting there and went, wow, yeah. I went, oh my gosh, you know, he's really noticing me out there. You know, I didn't think he knew who I was. I mean, I think he called me Tripudi for a year or two. and so I said, so I look at him, and he knew it was going to affect the way I play. But I looked at him, and I said, no, sir, it's not going to affect the way I play on the field. And he leans over his desk, and looks me right in the eye, and he says, I didn't think it would. And that was all it needed. I made the second string that fall, and first game to Georgia Tech in Atlanta. My name's on the travel list, and I call up my parents and my brothers. I finally made it. I finally made the team. I'm going to travel. So I'm just happy to be there. We get in Atlanta in first quarter against Georgia Tech. They're driving on us, and, you know, they're on our close to our goal line, and Coach Bryant turns around and yells, Tripoli, Tripoli. And I couldn't believe it. I went up there. I'm like, this is my first game I ever dressed. You know, first quarter of the first game. There's no way he's going to put me in. Get in for Stan Gay, he says. I said, now? Get in for Gay. So, you know, I played 20 plays and, you know, ended up starting and playing in the pros for a few years. But that's the kind of guy Coach Bryant was.
It's a great story, again, from and it ties in with the stories we've been telling about other walk-ons down on campus. And it, you know, it's perseverance, and you had to have had some talent, but I think what was more important was what was beating inside your chest is every bit
right.
as yeah. important as what the talent you were exhibiting on the field. So, man, kudos to you, and, you know, you got to go all the way through to the coach's last game. And what was it like when he said, yeah, I'm retiring, I'm going to quit? And when did he tell you guys?
Well, you know, in the locker room, in the last practice, his last practice, it was actually the day before the game, and he called a team meeting, and he was just so choked up. We've never seen, because there's Coach Bryant, the greatest coach that ever lived, and he had such poise and confidence, and he was, you know, just a very, very, you know, well-respected and just, you know, carried himself with such an aura, and everybody was just so, you know, so respected of him. And we never saw him break down. We never saw him show a lot of emotion or cry. And he started to that day, and there wasn't a dry eye in the whole room. And everybody was crying. And the last day, we had so much pressure on us to win that game. And it was just an unbelievable. It was probably the hardest hitting college game I've ever seen to this day, some 30 years later. Because, you know, Jeremiah Castile had three interceptions in the first half. Tony Eason was in there. I forget the other starting quarterback got knocked out a couple plays. We were hitting him so hard, and the backup came in through a couple interceptions. it was a close game, and, you know, it was we were just happy to win it for him.
What was it like after the game? I mean, you knew that this was the last game of probably the greatest football coach of all time, and arguably so. And you know, I've got the picture of you know, the team kind of carrying him off the field. Encapsulate what it felt like in the locker room post game, and with the fact. I mean, did you guys go around and hug him, or you know what went down?
No, it wasn't. You know, in my coaching career, I take a lot of the great characteristics of Coach Bryant, and you know, I'm a more of an emotional guy, and tell my players I love them all the time, and I'm hard on them. I'm really, really intense. I'm an intense coach, but you know, they know how much I care about them. But Coach Bryant just didn't show a lot of emotion. You know, we were all happy. All the assistant coaches, we were all hugging and just having a grand old time. And Coach Bryant was. He was kind of melancholy in some respect. It was obviously bittersweet. You know, we always really didn't want him to retire, but we really didn't know how sick he was, because he was a private person in that respect. But, you know, we knew he struggled sometimes to get out to practice, but we didn't know he was going to die a month later.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Paul, if... obviously, you played for Coach Bryant, and you see what Nick Saban's doing at Alabama now. Can you compare the two coaches, you know, similarities, differences?
Yes, I can. I can compare it. There's a lot of similarities that I can see from talking to Mel Moore and some of the other players. We've got a player from Catholic up there now, DJ Petway. But a lot of the similarities, I think, are, you know, he's so, you know, I don't know if you've read the articles. There have been a couple articles out about, you know, the Sabanization of college football and how you do the process and how you grade kids or recruit kids and how you concentrate on the now and what can you do to better yourself today. And don't worry about the wins. Don't worry about the scoreboard. Don't worry about championships. You know, that'll come if you take care of your business and do your job every single day, every single play. And that's a lot of the similarities there. They're both tough, you know. They both don't compromise. And I think, you know, I think they just surround themselves with good people. You know, Coach Bryant was proud of the fact that he surrounded himself with good coaches, because I tell you, my coaches in college, and I played in Canada and in the NFL, and my coaches in college were so much better than my professional coaches. That's how good a coaching he had. I mean, my position coaches and obviously my head coach, but, you know, they were better than my pro coaches.
Well, that's pretty high praise.
Yeah, they really were. Especially my position coaches were better. My position coach in college was better than my position coach in the pros. And so he, you know, Coach Ryan was the first to tell you the only reason he's standing so tall is because he's on the shoulders of, you know, giants of his assistants. And he had some great assistant coaches everywhere, from especially the strength and conditioning coaches. I'll tell you a funny story. The strength and conditioning coach he had when I got there is named Al Miller. Al Miller is one of the most world-renowned strength coaches to this day. He went back and got in. He's with the Oakland Raiders now as their strength coach. But he studied, went over the Russians, studied the Russians and how they power lifted, and he was kind of a pioneer in some of the techniques that he's done. But Coach was one of the best. He spent like 15 years with Dan Reeves. But anyway, we get there for Coach Bryant's last game, and he let us go home for a couple days. I think the game was on the 29th. Let us go home for Christmas Eve, and we had to meet in Memphis on Christmas. Well, Coach Bryant knew, you know, he's not stupid. He knew the guys would be drinking some beer and eating. And so he knew we were going to be out of shape in just 3-4 days. So he said, all right, let's go work out right after we got there. We got first team meeting, so let's go work out. So we get there, and Al Miller was a strength coach. He told Al to run us. Well, we must have did 40-yard sprints. I mean, the guys were just puking, and we had a couple offensive linemen pull up with hamstrings. Starting offensive lineman. So after about 40 of those, Coach Bryant walks over to Al Miller. He says, "Al, I told you to run him, not to kill him." Now, that's a lot.
That's good.
A lot coming from Coach Bryant. But that's the kind of assistance that he had, and strength and conditioning coach was and still is today. And you'll hear Saban say it. He's one of the most important coaches on the staff.
Sure, this is Kerry Clark. I was a young radio reporter back when you played. I remember you, number 23. And,
hey, Kerry, how are you?
I'm good. I was one of the guys that used to come over every Wednesday after Coach Perkins' press conference and eat that great food at Bryant Hall. those women that cooked that fried chicken, man, that was something else. But my question is this. It's kind of a two-part question, and the first part may be dumb because you're from upstate New York. But that Liberty Bowl game, Paul, that was the coldest I've ever been in my freaking life. I did not feel my toes until about 2 in the morning. That's number one. And number two, I wanted to ask you, you told a good story about your meeting with Coach Bryant, but I want to ask you a specific thing about his office. Tell our listeners about the couch and how it sat in relation to the tall desk.
That's funny. I had Marty Lyons on my radio show few weeks ago, and he was talking about that same couch and the very, you know, kind of a very similar meeting that he had with Coach Bryant that turned his life and his career around. And it was just amazing so many of these guys. But that couch had to be 80 years old. It's in the Bryant Museum to this day. I don't know how they how it hasn't fallen apart, but had no springs in it. And Coach Bryant had a little step up to his desk behind there. And he was a big man anyway. I mean, you know, he was 6'3", 6'4", and 250, and, you know, just a big cranium, ears. I mean, he was just an intimidating guy. And, you know, to sit in that couch and see him up there and talk to him was intimidating, even for assistant coaches. They were scared of him, too. But, yeah, it was something else to be invited into Coach Ryan's office. He always had his door open anyway, and, you know, I knocked on the door and said, come on in. But I think a lot of guys had that one-on-one meeting and relationship with Coach Bryant that was, you know, that was life-changing for a lot of the kids. And I'm sorry, the first question was about...
just about how freaking cold it was in Memphis that night.
Oh, yeah, it was nice. It was beautiful the week of the game.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was
so
cold.
And then the day of the game, it got cold. Oh, my gosh, it was so cold.
It was the ice bowl. I took my mother to that game, and I sat there with paper bags around my feet trying to keep my feet from freezing. Oh, my gosh. And it's brutal. And the wind up in the stands. Do you remember that? I mean, the wind was blowing so hard that your eyes would just tear up.
Yeah, I had a sideline pass that night, but I really was walking the sidelines, and my toes were just frozen. I couldn't feel my toes until literally about 2 in the morning after soaking them in hot water. The only time I've ever been anywhere near that cold in my life, there's a guy who's an equipment manager now by the name of Red Leonard. I don't know if you know him or not, Paul. But Red played high school ball at a little place called Millport, and their mascot was the Junior Tide. They're no longer a school now. They've been consolidated into South Lamar. But Millport played a game at Realtown, which is over close to Auburn. And I had to film that game from the top of the press box. It was a state championship football game. That's the only one that's even close. But Memphis, for me, I mean, I'll tell you, I've never been that cold in my life.
Well,
yeah,
if you remember, guys, it had an ice storm. And there was about a quarter of an inch to a half inch of ice that covered the entire stadium. It covered the crew had gone around at least gotten it off those metal stinking seats that they had, you know, with no backs on them. And there was ice after they'd taken it off the seats down in the, you know, where your feet go. It was unbelievably cold. And of course, you guys were down on the grass and up in the Sugarland because it was just stupid.
Oh,
stupid,
can you imagine
cold.
Having to run full speed into somebody with your head? I mean, it hurt just to touch something, just to bang, you know, tap something would hurt. You imagine how bad it hurt to hit. I tell you, there's only one other game, and I played in Canada, and I played, you know, grew up in upstate New York, and I played in the snow many, many, many times. But there's one game that was even colder than the Liberty Bowl, and it had to do with us at Alabama. We went up and played Boston College in 1983, and it was much colder than Memphis. And I'll tell you why. It started out about 30 degrees, 35 degrees. It was raining hard. Wind was blowing 40 miles an hour, 30, 40 miles an hour. As a matter of fact, in the third quarter, the TV feed and the power went out. That's how bad it was. But it was so cold. It was that bone-chilling cold, that wet cold, you know, that goes through you that you can't get warm. That's how it was up there in Boston. And, oh, my gosh, we fumbled 6 times. I blocked the punt. It was our only touchdown. I blocked the punt. Anthony Smiley ran it back. And my hand felt like it hit a brick. It hurt for a week. My hand hurt for a whole week just blocking the punt. That's how cold it was. But that game, you know, and a lot of my teammates from Alabama never even stood in 20-degree weather, 10-degree weather, and we had to play football. It was like, I don't know what the wind chill factor was, but it was by far the coldest game in my career.
Well, Paul, we appreciate you coming on the show tonight and wish you all the best in all your different endeavors, and have to say we're totally proud of you from, you know, getting your degree and your teaching certificate so you can step up and become a head coach and impact young lives the way you do. And sometimes people don't realize the effort and the time and – that guys like you put into developing young wives, and not just from an athletic perspective, but from a role model as well. So much appreciated. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's a passion of mine, and it's my calling, and I should have done it earlier, but it's never too late. And, that's why I do it, is to impact kids' lives. Thanks so much, guys.
Hey, it's been real. And again, Paul Tripoli, from former Bama player that played under Coach Bear Bryant, and it's been just a terrific segment. Paul, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, like Thomas said in the back chat, he said, I could sit and listen to this guy for hours, and I think we probably could have kept him on for another hour. But we didn't plan that, Kerry. I mean, to talk about the walk-ons, then the fact that Paul was a walk-on down at Bama and played himself into a fairly premier position with the team. Not a big guy. If you remember, Tripp was 6 foot, maybe 200, 185, 200. Thomas, you got any stats on him?
Not off the top of my head. Thanks for dropping me up.
Rock, I'm messing with you.
Thomas is like, why are you talking about these games before I was born?
Here, he's 6 foot 197 from Utica, New York.
Utica.
Whatever. Oh my gosh.
Utica.
I had to pull something up on the fly. That's all I've got.
You did good, buddy. You did good. Tripple's a fun guy to watch. He made his name covering kicks too. He'd go down like a missile on kickoff coverage. There's a lot of I'm glad you brought up Will Lowry. There's a lot of similarities in those two guys' careers, actually. Tripp was more of a corner than a safety, but when he got in there and he got a shot on you, he was going to bring the wood. And when Tripp hit you, I don't care if he was 6 foot, 197, you knew you'd been hit.
You knew you'd been thrilled. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He played with a passion. He was. I mean, I loved watching him when he played. You know, I knew who he was.
It was fun when I got to meet him at that dinner, and trust me, folks, we could have sat for the next hour and Tripp could have told us stories about his playing career. But I think more importantly, the takeaway from this, and this is just kind of an observation on my part. I've been blessed to be able to meet several guys that have played for Coach Bryant. And they all seem to have a similar characteristic in that they are gracious, humble. They know their station in life. They're more than appreciative of the time they got to spend with the coaches and with Coach Bryant. And I'm hoping that some of that accrues to today's team and the way Saban is approaching things. And, Thomas, I thought that was a great question as far as a comparison between, from Paul's perspective, between what he sees with, Coach Saban and Coach Bryant. I've long said I call him Baby Bear, which I'm sure he'd love it if I said that to his face. Hey, Baby Bear. But I think Nick and Bryant had an awful lot of the similar attributes. It's like Nick, though, has got a burning, not to go all wax psychological on you guys, but he's got something to prove, and I don't know what it is. I mean, it's just he's a machine, and I didn't see Bryant as he's had the same desire to win, but it was in a different way. So, you know what, we're going to go to break here in a minute. Hopefully Blip will come on with us. He's got baby duty tonight, and maybe he'll be able to get away and join us. If not, then that's cool. We've got a whole lot to talk about in the coming hour. You are listening to BAMS Radio, and we will be back in just a moment.
This is Cooper from the Devil Makes Three coming at you from the coast of Alabama on BAMS Radio. Roll Tide!
Hey, Bam Balam, this is Gogo Bordello. I'm Eugene Hoots at the Hangout on a BAMS Radio. Bam Balam, roll tide, Bam Balam, yeah.
ask him, I won't be there. In fact, I will not be found anywhere. Not in Nevada, not in Sahara, on Chamalugma or Guadalajara. Cause I'll be climbing top of a never, never rant with my contaminated friends. Yeah! Hey, 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 howdy, howdy, ho, howdy, howdy, hey.
This is Marquise Mays on BAM Radio. Roll Tide.
Yeah, baby. Thank you.
What makes BAM's tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tents for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy. Or call 251-247-1169 to order.
Ah, good stuff. Another Wednesday night on BAM's Radio, and fun segment with Paul Tripoli. I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as the crew here at BAM's did, because we were all kind of making eyes at each other and laughing kind of behind the scene, behind the microphone. Good stuff. Anytime you get somebody on that played for Coach Bryant, it's fun. Well, gentlemen, I think it's time to start our engines. Does anybody want to jump into the Ole Miss Black Bears and have a little discourse on that? Or, Kerry, you've got the frowny face. Where do you want to go with this?
Well, before we get to the full Ole Miss preview, it was fun last week, Bird and Thomas, to see the members of the national champion softball team receive their rings at halftime from Coach Moore, and that was awesome. Well, that's going to happen in another way this weekend. The national championship, back-to-back national championship, Alabama gymnastics team will receive their championship rings at halftime of the game against Ole Miss. By the way, I did participate in the Suds for Sully charity car wash that the gymnasts had last week. That's the first and probably only time the Alabama gymnastics team will wash the old CC Bama Camry, but they did a good job, and I appreciate it. And the money went to a great cause. A former gymnast, Tracy Tillman, her son is having to have a skull implant. He's only 10 years old. So the money went to that, so that was a great cause. And I got my picture taken with Coach Patterson and the trophy from last year's national championship. So that was really cool. Now, another group that will be honored this weekend because they're holding their 20th reunion, Coach Gene Stallings and the 1992 national champions will be in Tuscaloosa this weekend, and they, too, will be honored at halftime of the Ole Miss game. But by the time all that happens, we would have played a half of SEC football against an SEC opponent. And young Thomas Watts, what can you tell us about those Black Bears from Austin?
Well, first off, a little
what
bit
a great
history.
Segue.
Yes, very
I'm
well done.
Sultan of segue. But anyway, y'all go ahead.
First, a little history of the series. Alabama utterly dominates it. They lead 48-9-2. Ole Miss hasn't won in 9 years. Their last one was 2003. Ole Miss is actually 0-8 against the nation's top-ranked team. I personally expect it to be 0-9. The game itself will be covered by ESPN. Joe Tessitore is your play-by-play guy, with Matt Millen as your analyst, and Jessica Mendoza on the sideline. I actually like Matt Millen and Joe Tessitore as a team. Jessica Mendoza has forever poisoned herself in my eyes because of what I consider to be absolutely horrendous softball coverage, but I'll allow it for this point. A couple of the Ole Miss players have they've – let me take a step back here. Hugh Freeze, who came over this year, runs a high-octane spread offense. He likes to pass, but unfortunately, outside of one receiver, Dante Moncrief, Ole Miss doesn't have a lot of receiving depth. They have several great running backs, though. So they run a lot of almost Rich Rodriguez-esque ground game plays. So they rush a lot. Jeff Scott, one of their running backs, ranks fifth in the SEC at 90 rushing yards a game. Bo Wallace, their quarterback, who is a sophomore JUCO transfer from Texas, is also a big-time rusher. He actually has the most attempts of anybody. He averages 4.1 yards a carry. Jeff Scott, who I already mentioned, he averages 8.6 yards a carry. So there's definitely some big play threat coming into this coming out of Ole Miss. The Sunseri Brunetti connection will probably still happen on some level, because while Bo Wallace does start, Brunetti has a little package in the offense from what I read statistically. So you might see the Brunetti Sunseri Sicilian mafioso meet up at the 50-yard line type thing going on, which, you know, would be funny.
I didn't think any Italian had a little package.
Well, there is that. Let's see. Let's go defense real quick, because I think the defense is actually the more interesting part for Ole Miss, and then I'll jump back to offense. Ole Miss is actually in the middle of a very odd changeover. They shut out Tulane last week to the tune of 39-0. So in order to better prepare for Alabama, they go from a 4-2-5 set to a 4-3-4 base defense. 4-2-5, if you want to make a rough analog to Alabama, is Alabama's nickel defense, whereas the 4-3 is what our base defense, what Alabama's base defense would be, except ours is a 3-4. Looking at their players, they're very small. They're small individuals. Their nose tackle is 6'1", 254 on my notes. Bird and I couldn't seem to agree on weights, but I'm going with mine. Their nose tackle, 6'1", 254. One of their defensive ends is 6'3", 233, which isn't terrible for five technique defensive end, excuse me. The back end of their defense is very small, aside from Mike Mary leads the team with 22 tackles. He's their middle linebacker.
And he's pretty big. I mean, he really has got the classic frame of a middle linebacker.
Yeah, he's 6'3", 256. He's an athletic, just athletic play all over the field guy. He's a junior, so he definitely has some experience. A name that Bama fans who follow the recruiting will be familiar with is Denzel Kimdichie. Denzel Kimdichie is the brother of Robert Kimdichie, the current 2013 top overall prospect. Denzel Kimdichie starts and is second on the team in tackles. Let me double-check my notes real quick on
and
that.
While you're doing that, I can also tell you that it looks like Robert got all the groceries, because Denzel is 5'10", and what about 197?
Yeah, he's listed as 5'11", 203 on my stuff.
And yeah.
He's second on the team in tackles, but it's very interesting. Looking at a 4-3, you really don't want linebackers to be making as many tackles as they are. You want your defensive linemen to be able to make the plays before it gets to that level predominantly. Reason behind that, 4-3 and 3-4, they're flipped. You want your playmaking defensive linemen in a 4-3 to make plays. You want your playmaking linebackers in a 3-4 to make plays predominantly. So, obviously, with their leading tacklers being cornerbacks and linebackers, there is a weakness along the defensive line. To highlight that weakness, Texas, the only team they've played with a pulse, rolled up 66 points and over 600 yards of offense. And it wasn't 550 yards of passing and 50 rushing. It was about even. It was like 325. These ballpark numbers. So the defense is very vulnerable. Flipping back over to the offense real quick, I've already mentioned Bo Wallace. I really want to touch on Jeff Scott. He was preseason All-SEC, according to USA Today. He's a home run threat in the most classic sense of the word. He'll find a crease and you won't catch him. The only receiver that even slightly concerns me is Dante Moncrief. He is a 6'3", 216-pound sophomore from Raleigh, Mississippi. On the year, he's got 19 catches for 343 yards and 4 touchdowns. But he's another one of those guys with such a high average catch, he's a deeper threat type player. And at 6'3", he can do damage. The one thing, whereas the rest of Ole Miss's players are fairly small, their offensive line is just huge.
It's huge. Absolutely huge.
Their smallest guy is their right guard. He's only 6'1", but everyone else is over 6'4". And there are the only one under 300 pounds is the right tackle, which is probably acceptable simply because lighter tackles can lead to better pass blockers. So Ole Miss, they have some size on the offensive line, but they're small elsewhere. The one thing that's very intriguing about this matchup is Hugh Freeze has got this team believing. I watched almost the entire Texas Ole Miss game, and Texas was really putting it on Ole Miss's defense. But the Ole Miss defense never quit. Even when they were down 35, the Ole Miss defense was still, you know, busting their butt to make turnovers and make plays to try and give the offense a chance. And the offense, to their credit, they never stopped against Texas either. Texas would score a touchdown, Ole Miss would score a touchdown. It would be back and forth touchdowns, and then Bo Wallace would throw an interception, which it's going to be interesting this Saturday because Bo Wallace, as Kerry mentioned, is coming back from an injury. He has a shoulder problem, probably from the fact that he's gotten smacked around a little bit because he runs the ball a lot.
It's multiple injuries, I think. It's not just that. He's been nicked up pretty good.
Well, I read shoulder personally, but that's one of the many problems with Bo Wallace. But the problem for Ole Miss is they're playing with great effort. They just don't have the horses. If a couple of years, Hugh Freeze is recruiting, if he's able to bring in SEC caliber athletes with the size and the skill to match up with an Alabama or an LSU, I think Ole Miss could be a dangerous team. Unfortunately, Hugh Freeze has been there all of 6 months, and he's working with what was a very bare cupboard left him by Houston Nutt. It's a game that could, if Ole Miss plays over their head, could stay interesting for longer than it should. But quite honestly, I don't see how Alabama couldn't functionally name their score against Ole Miss. It would take a lot of bad breaks by Alabama to really make this a close game. The high-octane nature of the Ole Miss offense could stymie the Alabama D for a quarter, maybe two. But I expect that advantage will wear away as Alabama imposes its will and Alabama's depth can keep guys fresh. That was one of the big things that has been brought up this week. There are a lot of players along the defensive line for Alabama being rotated through, not only because of the injury to Ivory, but because there will be a lot of defensive line rotations because those kids are going to have to run a lot against Ole Miss.
I do have a concern, and the concern I've got is that with an offensive line like these guys have, and really all four of their running backs are quality. Mackey is quality, Scott is quality, Latavius Mathers is a quality guy, and Jalen Walton as well as a freshman. Those guys can carry the rock, and you line them up behind these horses they've got. And it could be an issue if we have a turnover or two and all of a sudden they go up and they go into ball control mode. And they've got the horses to do it, folks. I'm here to tell you. So before everybody jumps up and down and gets all excited over another 35-40-point win, you need to think this one through. They've got the size and they've got the talent to be able to play ball control. Now, question is whether or not that's completely outside of the aegis of the way that Ole Miss plays, because, of course, Hugh is you know, the hurry up and run and fun type coach, and that's the offense he's instilled. If he does that, he dies. I'll tell you right now. If he plays ball control, we have a couple of turnovers, it could be a whole long game for us.
Well, absolutely. I just think philosophically it's such a departure for Hugh Freeze to not play that up-tempo style. Texas and Alabama, if you look at how they're playing schematically, are a lot alike. And Hugh Freeze never slowed down in that game. That's why there were 600 yards and 66 points put up against Ole Miss. Now, maybe, as seen by this defensive changeover, he's preparing for that stick a lot of beef on the 5 yards close to the line of scrimmage and make Alabama beat you with the pass. But
his quarterbacks are too small. You look at his safeties and corners and DB, and those guys are 5'11". He's got one kid, Pruitt, at a safety at 6'3", 210, but the rest of them are all 5'11 and 175 pounds. That ain't going to get the job done.
Well, I'm just going to cite Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky was willing to give Alabama the pass to stuff the line with 7 or 8 guys and force A.J. McCarron to beat him. Am I saying that A.J. McCarron cannot do that? I think there's been enough evidence to say that he can. But still, looking at it, that is a valid game plan until play calling by Doug Nussmeier and play by A.J. McCarron forces them to change.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to caution one more time the Bama Nation to not get terribly overconfident on this, because this could be more of a chess match, and this one could be one from the coach's booth. And I think you sort of touched on it, Thomas, that we're going to get to watch the way each team counteracts or counterpunches the best shot thrown with the original drawn up plans. And so I'm kind of excited to watch this. I hope to be in some sleazy topless club in Atlanta at the time and having my way with an orange juice and a ESPN on TV. We've got a caller, guys. Do you guys want to put this caller on and see what they've got about the game?
Absolutely. I wasn't able to screen because we were doing the breakdown, so
okay.
It's going to be kind of a cold call, but that's all right.
That's all right. 9572 just hung up, so never mind.
Good thing I didn't screen the caller.
You didn't screen the caller. Kerry, what do you have on the game?
Well, a lot of times when athletic competitions take place, the best team wins, like the team that has the 5 stars and the 4 stars and the best coach in college football. And I agree with what you said about not being overconfident. I don't think Alabama's going to cover a 32-point spread. My particular score for this week is 38-14 Alabama.
I think you're right.
And that's not really a beatdown. It's a solid SEC win at home.
Yes,
what it is.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a chance to maybe get a few young guys some more playing time in the fourth quarter. And that's really pretty much all I've got. I'm not terribly afraid of this game. I do think that the 80-play pace a game that Ole Miss's offense likes to try to run will be a challenge for Alabama. And Alabama will have to play some backup defensive linemen a few more snaps than they have in the first 4 contests. But that's why you have a strength and conditioning coach. And that's why you have defensive line and linebacker position coaches to get them ready for that kind of thing. And they'll be ready. I think Ole Miss will get some points. I don't think Alabama's going to shut them out. But like I say, I'm going to go Alabama 38, Rebels or Black Bears, wherever they are, 14. And whenever you guys are ready, we can swap over to the recruiting aspect of this week's
You
game.
Just itching to do that, aren't you? Now, come on. You know, you're glossing over the Black Bears, not giving them any respect whatsoever. And I'm trying to come up with some juicy statistics, and I'm even having a hard time doing that. By the way, here's a juicy statistic for you, and this is year-to-date for Alabama, but T.J. Yeldon's had 5 less rushing attempts and has about 20 more yards than Eddie Lacy has. And it seems like Eddie carries the ball a lot more, which he does, not a lot more, but he's had 5 more attempts. But remarkably similar, and, of course, the average per carry, TJ's at 6.3 and Eddie's at 5.2.
What's Kenyon Drake's average per carry?
He's not even on here, dude.
Okay, it's like 15, I think.
Yeah.
hit
anyway,
something completely off the wall. Interesting stats before we move on to recruiting. The Ole Miss is breaking in a bunch of new starters. Looking at it, I count six players on their starting 2D that have one season's worth of experience. Everyone else is breaking in on some level. Moncrief, I mentioned, has been starting for a year. The starting tight end has been starting for 2.5, so that could be an option, but that's putting pressure on Alabama's linebackers, which if there's one spot that I have no worry, it's the play of Alabama's linebacking core. So very young team, might not know enough to be intimidated by Alabama starting off, and if things break Ole Miss's way, you could definitely see a game going longer than it should. I do agree Alabama covering that 32-point spread is an extreme stretch. I think a solid 2-3 touchdown win is legitimate, but past that, you're kind of pie in the sky expecting too much.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we're all kind of singing from the same hymnal in the Church of College Football.
Yeah, they don't let me go to strip clubs at my church. Anyway, I would like to.
I'm the designated driver for this soiree. Since I am a non-drinking individual, I will be sitting there being the babysitter for my compadres that evening. I'll have you know I'm doing the Christian thing that I do.
Are you?
I absolutely am.
Going to pass out some tracts to the employees?
No. They're dollar bills with George Washington.
Oh, Lord. Oh, wow. Okay. can we get to recruiting, please?
You know,
I feel like you want to get to recruiting. I don't know why.
I'm just black bared out. I'm sorry.
He's,
I understand.
He's absolutely.
It was a great breakdown. I could not have done that. Shout out to Thomas Watts. It's riveting stuff. I'll be thinking about that in my sleep tonight. But, you know, one of the things about home SEC games, here's a segue, is it gives you a chance to host recruits. And there is a growing and an impressive list of people coming to this game this weekend as guests of the University of Alabama, both official and unofficial. And that list includes Thomas Watts. It's not that long, so I won't talk for 5 minutes here. Jonathan Cook was just recently added to the list. He's a defensive back from Spanish Fort, a teammate of DJ Johnson, who we talked earlier is probably not going to be part of the team this year because of DJ's increasing legal problems in Baldwin County, including a second rape arrest that occurred this week. More on that later. But Jonathan Cook is his teammate. Jonathan's a cornerback. He's committed to Nebraska, but he's visiting Alabama this weekend, and he has begun to intrigue Alabama coaches with the wonderful senior year that Cook is having for Spanish sport, and it could take away some of the sting if unable to turn Marquez White from Dothan. Cornelius Elder, an athlete from Nashville, Tennessee, will be there. Holland Fisher, a Virginia Tech commitment and a safety from Midlothian, Virginia, will be on hand. B.J. Hammond, a wide receiver from Gadsden City High School, committed to Mississippi State, will be in Tuscaloosa. Commitment Grant Hill of Huntsville, offensive lineman, will be there. Commitment O.J. Howard, tight end from Prattville, who's missed the last game or two for undisclosed reasons. We're not sure exactly if he's hurt or what it is. His coach isn't talking. Walker Jones, younger of the Jones boys from Cordova, Tennessee, will be there. Linebacker. Quarterback Parker McLeod from Marietta, Georgia, will be there. Defensive lineman Finesse Middleton, an Ole Miss commitment from Gadsden City, will be there. Darius Page, the Alabama commitment from Foley, Alabama, who's having a great senior year for Foley, will be there. Jawan Ramsey, a USC commitment from Brentwood, Tennessee, will be there. And Alabama commitment DeMarcus Walker of Jacksonville, Florida, will be on his official this weekend. That's the class of 13 kids. The class of 14 student-athletes visiting Tuscaloosa this weekend include DeMarcus Bingham, a wide receiver from Foley, Alabama. Last one of those we had is playing for the Atlanta Falcons right now. Sean Hamilton, a linebacker who I have scouted this year and has great range and mobility, is a little bit undersized, but he's a very good player. He's from Carver and Montgomery. Devlin Hodges. Now, this is an interesting story, guys. He's from Kimberly, Alabama, Mortimer Jordan High School. He's on my list to scout in a couple of weeks. Devlin is an athletic quarterback who is considered a pro-style quarterback, and he met before and after the game last weekend with Coach Saban. He's a 2014 kid who could be on the verge of a commitment. Marlon Humphrey, the very outstanding corner from Hoover, who I had the pleasure of scouting last week at Northridge and will again this week at Vestavia. Marlon had a 72-yard kickoff return and a blocked punt and a couple of passes broken up in their win over Northridge. E.J. Moss, who we talked about many times on this show, quarterback, linebacker, H-back, tight end, whatever he will be in college, from Asheville, Alabama, he'll be there. He is heavily leaning toward Alabama and may be on the verge of a commitment. Linebacker T.J. Posey of Gadsden City. Sounds like about half the senior class of Gadsden City is going to come down on the bus. Running back Rashawn Thomas. He is out of Oxford and a great player who's also possibly on the verge of a commitment. These are 14 kids that are juniors in high school. Running back Bo Scarborough from Tuscaloosa, who only had about 85 yards in the game I scouted this past weekend against Hoover, and only about half of those yards were against Hoover's first-team defense, and he lost a fumble. It wasn't Bo's finest hour, but he's still an outstanding prospect and a Bama commitment. And very briefly, from the class of 15, defensive back Rico McGraw of Nashville, and a very important basketball visitor, Juwan Johnson, a guard from Memphis, who is pretty much down to Alabama and Miami, loves Coach Grant and his staff. He will be on campus this weekend as well, and he could be on the verge of committing to Alabama and becoming the third member of the fall basketball signing class. So that's what's going on in recruiting visits this weekend, fellas.
Wow. I don't know where you get that stuff, dude. That's amazing. I mean,
I bring the wood, son. I bring the wood every week. You ought to know that by now. I bring it.
Carry the lumber, Clark.
He's a lumberjack, and he's okay. Anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, we didn't bring up the impending commitment of Derrick Henry. Henry is scheduled to commit this Friday at 3.
We're saving that for you, sir.
Oh, well, then I will segue myself to myself from myself, and we'll go on Derrick Henry. First off, if you didn't hear on Friday, Derrick Henry broke the single-game rushing record in Florida with 502 yards and 6 touchdowns for Yulee, Florida. Very, very impressive game. His coach did go on to say he could probably have had 700 yards in some games, but they pull him out just so he doesn't get hurt. Scary thought. Anyway, Derrick Henry is set to commit, as I said, on Friday. And signs say everything says Alabama. He's deciding between Alabama and Tennessee. But the 6'3", 240-pound running back out of Yulee, Florida, is most likely going to pick Alabama, would be our third commit in the running back commit in the 2013 class. Very interesting player. He's a big guy. You know, 6'3 is huge for a running back. The other big guys that I have seen, Adrian Peterson. I know Carrie has busted me about Herschel Walker and
Bo Jackson.
Thank you. That name flew out of my head.
Bo was huge.
So, very big guy. One of the problems he has is because he's so big, his pad level can get a little out of control. If you watch, and I'll explain what I mean when I say high pad level. If you watch Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson run, they're running downhill, and they're just churning with their shoulders leaned down. It means they can bounce off tackles and keep going. It's why when Trent Richardson or Mark Ingram run, it just looks like four or five people have to take them down. They bust their arm tackles, and they keep going. Henry hasn't quite developed that yet, but if he can learn that, which, as we've mentioned, Burton Burns is going to be his position coach, he's going to be absolutely devastating. He could be better than T.J. Yeldon right now if he can get that part down. I'm not saying he is. I'm saying he could be. But it's a fascinating problem for Alabama. Because at worst, with his size, he could take over Jalston Fowler's role as an H-back, fullback, multi-purpose guy. And he's got enough upside to be as good or better than Fowler is at each of his positions.
Bingo.
So take what Jalston Fowler is right now, before the knee injury, obviously. Take what he was before his injury and bump it up a notch or two, and you have what Derrick Henry could be. And this is before he's been through strength and conditioning. at the very worst, he could do that. He could also redefine the running back position at Alabama in a way not seen in the past 25 years. But I'm not going to put that much expectation on the young man.
Let's get him here first.
Absolutely. That's the other thing I was going to say, and thank you, Bert. Even though he commits to Alabama, as with every commitment, it ain't over till there is a faxed letter of intent first week of February. So just keep that in mind when you're planning out your who's going to be the next awesome Alabama player.
Well, I'm hoping that we on that day we get to hear names like Henry and Kim Dichi and a whole plethora of guys that are five-star players coming to Alabama. And, again, we just – you know, we don't rebuild the team. We reload the gun, for gosh sakes.
Absolutely. Henry would be a huge get. The talk of Henry coming and bringing Laramie Tunsil, it's kind of dropped off a little bit, but getting Henry will give Alabama a huge leg up to get Laramie Tunsil. I mentioned Laramie Tunsil last week, 6'6", 295 tackle out of Florida. He's a little smallish in terms of his weight. Yeah, I just thought a 295-pound man is small, but he is able to get in the way of speed rushers, which is something, unfortunately, Alabama's current right tackle, D.J. Fluker, lacks. Fluker's so big, he has trouble with speed rushers. Tunsil does not have that problem. You want to see a great analog? Think the Khalil kid out of USC that went number 3 overall. He's not a massive individual, but he is
quick.
That he'll just stand in front of you and you might be able to bull rush him occasionally if you catch him when he's using poor technique, but you're not going to run around him. If you run around him, you'll be 8 yards deep in the pocket, and the quarterback, Christian Ponder, will step up and just launch the ball 50 yards. I will have to disagree with someone in the chat room now.
I'm reading that, too. I was going to, you know, our good friend Viking Horse is kind of dumping on Kim Dichi, and I was going to get you guys' take on this. Was that what you were referring to, Thomas?
That's what I was about to get into. Kim Dichi could potentially – Kim Dichi potentially being a cancer, but think about what recruiting has become. Recruiting has gone from a young man being recruited, sending out film and a coach, offering him a scholarship and him going to this massive business. Coaches take your commitment, then they can pull them away because they're not binding. I don't have any problem with a guy trying to leverage spots for his friends. I don't think it's a good policy, and if Nick Saban were to do it, I wouldn't be happy with it, but I'm certainly not going to tear apart a guy for doing that. I think he's using the system that has been built by people that he never even talked to the best of his and his friends' advantage. Cancer thing aside, Robert Kim Dichi could go to the NFL right now and potentially push for starting time. He is that physically mature. A 6'5", 280-pound all-muscle guy, you roll out the red carpet for him.
Hmm. I don't – one of the things, I guess, and I was – Viking, if you could give us a call, because I've got – I just have a question, and I understand where you're coming from. He's basically, you know, saying go ahead and get out and don't let the door hit you in the butt. Is it because it's a character issue? Carrie, help me here.
I've got a lot of stuff to tell you about this.
Can you tell us?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Here we go. Good. Light okay. Fuse and run away.
Okay. Number one, if he was a cancer, they would have already pulled his offer.
Okay.
Okay? They've pulled Reuben Foster's offer. They've not pulled Robert's offer.
Okay.
There's a such thing as character analysis. And sometimes when kids commit too early, like Foster did, you end up losing them and they go out and get Auburn tattoos. Robert Kim Dichi ain't gone and got no Clemson tattoo. I'm going to tell you right now, people that know Robert Kim Dichi say, A, he's not a cancer. B, he's probably not going to Clemson. He was just trying to help some teammates get D1 scholarships. I would put the odds on Robert Kim Dichi as we're sitting here right now in the BAM studio in Bluff Park, Hoover, Alabama. I would say 70% chance he goes to Ole Miss, about a 25% chance he goes to Alabama, and about a 5% chance he goes to Clemson. But he is not a cancer. He's just a big kid.
Reuben Foster may end up being a cancer, but Robert Kendiche is not a cancer. Robert Kendiche is a great football player that will have Alabama scholarship papers in his hand on signing day, and what he chooses to execute in facts is up to him.
Yeah.
But they aren't going to pull his offer. They're struggling mightily right now just to try to get him to take an official visit. Ole Miss has his brother, and Ole Miss has allegedly, and I use that word strongly, promised his father a job in the Oxford area. Is that legal? Hell no, it's not legal.
Right.
But that's you know, there's a lot of things that goes on in recruiting that are not legal. And for that reason, the brother and the job offer, it's going to make Ole Miss really hard to beat, okay? If signing day was tomorrow, I'm telling you, Robert would go to Ole Miss. My good friend John Garcia, a recent recruiting analyst hired by BamaMagnetScout.com, who transferred down here from Syracuse, is now covering the state of Alabama, went to cover a combine a couple of months ago over at Hoover. It was also a 7-on-7 tournament, and Robert was up there with the Grayson team. Robert's walking through the high school out of the locker room with an Ole Miss shirt on. He sees John and runs back into the room and comes back out with a Clemson shirt on. But he's not a cancer. He's just a kid that is a little bit confused, is having a lot of things thrown at him. And I'm going to tell you, he will have Alabama scholarship papers in his hand. He may not sign them and fax them in, but they are trying to get him to take an official visit, and they are not pulling his offer. There's no scenario where they say, don't let the door hit you when the good Lord splits you.
Anybody that that
sorry, Viking, that's not happening.
Denigrates the talent of this kid is because he's like a Jadeveon Clowney, correct?
Very similar.
Very similar. And who wouldn't look at what South Carolina has become since Jadeveon has kind of come into his own over there?
Yeah,
they're a very very
defense.
They're a very, very respected defense now, and I think a lot of that keys off of Jadeveon because of the respect other teams have to give him. And I think this kid has got the ability to come in no matter who he plays for. Let's face it, if he goes to Ole Miss, and Thomas, you mentioned this earlier in the show, then we may have our hands full down the road because Hugh Freeze is a very dynamic guy. He's charismatic. He is going to probably – now, watching Freeze and Mullen maybe self-destruct each other with the NCAA over in Mississippi is going to be real interesting because I think the nature of both of those guys as being so dynamic, you know, and Kerry's kind of giving me the nod like, yeah, you might have hit something here. But I'm telling you, they're both high-energy, win-at-all-cost people. And it may be that particular trait of personality comes back and bites both of those schools right in the old Batuski.
Well, and again, if Robert Kendiche goes to Ole Miss, and I think if signing day tomorrow he would do that, if he goes to Ole Miss, you better hope to H-E double hockey stick that we do sign Laramie Tunsil because we got to have somebody to block him. Cyrus could probably handle him next year, but Cyrus is gone after next year. So – you better hope we get Laramie and some others like Laramie.
Yeah.
And Leon Brown pans out and Austin Shepherd pans out. And
yeah.
Because Robert's going to be heck on wheels in Oxford if he goes there.
Yeah.
He'll be a 3-year starter and then he'll be gone. In Alabama, they're not promising him to be a starter.
Yeah.
They're telling him he'll be able to compete for a position. But Alabama's recruiting Robert very hard. They have not slowed down at all.
Where's Laura McKeeman when you need her?
She's probably brandishing that Miss Florida crown somewhere.
That's true.
Preparing for her weekend Fox Sports sideline duties.
Or getting ready for her Miss America pageant, one of the two.
Oh,
Hey, we've got a caller on hold. Caller 0822, come on with us and tell us what you're thinking this evening. Welcome to BAMS Radio.
What's going on, fellas?
There he is. There's my man, Bring the Pain. What's up, Pain?
Not much, guys. What's going on tonight?
We are trying to engender some sort of phobia about the black bears, and I can't get a rise out of either of my compadres here.
I don't think we have nothing to worry about. I think Nick Saban is going to be a good recruiter no matter what anybody says. And if we don't get Robert, if he goes to Ole Miss, I still think Nick Saban will bring in someone that could be better than him. You're saying those guys could be like Davion Clowney. I haven't seen them. I haven't even heard about them, but I think there could be always someone that could be just a tad better than he is that Nick Saban would go after. This is my opinion, though. You know?
In Saban we trust, and I have to say I line up with you 100%. And even if he doesn't find somebody better, he'll find a way to out-scheme, out-smart, and outplay the guy across from him.
Well, that's what I was actually going to bring up. The problem that a Kim Dichie-type talent brings to an offense trying to block him. You're talking about a guy that will almost assuredly require a chip on passing downs. You're talking about a guy that you might seriously consider keeping a tight end in just to double, gang block him, essentially. So when you as a defense can start dictating offensive formations 9 times out of 10, you gain such a huge advantage. Because even if you're having to use two players to block Robert Kim Dichie, you're now playing 9 on 10. Functionally, if you don't have a mobile quarterback, 8 on 10. And that is absolutely a win for the defense. So just thoughts about what a talented player like that can do. I didn't mean to kill the conversation, guys.
No, I'm listening.
No. I was listening too. And, you know, that could happen. But still, I think if we don't get this guy, I still think Nick Saban is one hell of a recruiter, and, you know, he'll get somebody else. And I think that it might be that we have to block this guy 2-on-1, but I don't think it will be like that. I think Nick Saban will get somebody that could pretty much handle him 1-on-1.
I think you're exactly right, and I think what will happen is that, basically if he goes over there, I mean, number one, Nick Saban's not going to worry an entire season over one player, and he'll find 50 ways to beat him. So, I'm doing a little bit of much ado about nothing, and maybe borrowing trouble because like Kerry says, we're not completely out of the picture yet. It sounds like Clemson may be. And it sounds like it may be between Ole Miss and Alabama. But if they're offering jobs to family members, his brother's already on the team and actually playing good football. I mean, the guys over there, he's not riding the pine as a freshman. They've got him on the field. Let's see. I'm not gonna weep for you, Argentina, but I will be happy if he does choose Alabama because I think he is an enormous talent that cannot be overlooked. And I think he will be a changer of whatever defense that he goes to play on. He would be a wonderful asset for Alabama. I think Saban will be able to work with the kid, get in his head, you know, if he's kind of straight up at all, which I think that's the question Viking has, is that he feels like maybe the kid threw us a curveball and is not a straight up stand up kid. You know what, get him in Saban and let him turn him into a man instead of a little boy, and at that point, then we'll see what happens. So,
I think that was more true for Foster, really, than it is for Kim Dichie. And as far as Reuben Foster goes, he's committed to Auburn, but there's a scenario developing where he signs with Georgia on National Signing Day.
Do you really think so?
I think there's a chance. So if I'm Auburn, I wouldn't be too right now he's Auburn, and I know he's got the tattoo and all that, but
the dumpster fire continues.
His buddy, Trey Matthews, who's a Georgia commitment, is working him really hard. Let's see what happens in February on Reuben Foster. Let's see what happens in February on Robert Kimbichi.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. I'm planning on taking the day off that day, so we're going to be broadcasting most of the day. Then you can count on my silly butt to be over here.
Yep, we'll be broadcasting all day on the signing day, and as we did last year, we had a good time with it, and we'll have a good time this year as well. So, wow, we're right up against a break. This segment has kind of flown by. We've eaten up most of it talking about guys that may or may not come to Alabama. I'm starting to sound like one of the chat boards. you know, wringing my hands and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And
you notice Thomas and I are not taking part in that. Hopefully Marty will call before the show's up. But if he doesn't, I've got the participation chart ready for before we sign off tonight.
Well, we've got, yeah, actually we've got another caller. And, by the way, thanks a lot for the call, Payne. It's always wonderful hearing from you. We're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back after we run a couple of messages with BAMS Radio. And we've got another caller, guys, so we'll come back on, take that caller, and then we will fill it with whatever fluffy stuff you've got out of your box of Rice Krispies.
Hey, it's Gino from Birmingham Mountain Radio here at Hangout with BAMS Radio. And check us out online if you're in Birmingham or anywhere around the country. It's bhammountainradio.com, the best in alternative and adult alternative music.
But I want everybody to think here for a second. How much does this day mean to you? Because if it means something to you, you can't stand still. You understand? You play fast. You play strong. You go out there and dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our trademark. That's our MO as a team. Like, that's what people know us as. Make his ass quit. Make his ass quit. Make his ass quit. Make his ass quit. Make his ass quit.
So now, so it's time to get it popping. The tide on roll, so let's get the body rocking. High to the nose and get it for the boot.
Well, you know what? I'm sitting here doing the little bumper rumpa with the Dubs Boys. Again, one of my favorite groups out there, right behind the 63 Boys. And we welcome, as always, to our Wednesday night conflagration, the king of college football, King Crimson. King, how are you, buddy?
Is this a show about strip clubs?
It can be.
I come in and fell in. All I'm hearing is strip clubs. I must have missed something. But just anyway, guys, how y'all doing tonight?
All good, brother. How about you?
Well, I've been sitting here listening. Had a long day. Had to get out there and pull the plow a little bit today and do a little work. But, you know, I've been thinking, I got a question for the astute panel there. This is a two-part question. First part is, do we script plays, the first 10, 15 plays of a game on offense? Second part is, if we see we can push somebody's butt around and just go straight vanilla, do you think we just kind of dial it back and do some plain Jane crap? Or, I mean, when do you expect it to turn up a little bit? You know what I'm saying? I mean, are we that conservative on offense that we're just going to do the basic stuff and push you around? Because what we're doing is not rocket science, guys. It's play action, you know, tight end in the flats, crossing patterns. I mean, it's just hat on hat moving the ball. And that's my question.
Well, to answer the first question, does Alabama script to the first 10, 15 plays? I think they do, but like Viking Horse is saying in the chat room, there are five or six scripts to follow, and they could change. It's remember the first couple of series in most football games are feeling out, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work based on how the defense is prepared for your offense. So the ability to flip the script, if necessary, is a big deal. So to answer your question, yes and no would actually be the most correct answer, which I realize is not an answer at all, sort of, but. And
well, let me throw this at you. I played quarterback in high school, and I had some big old, big linemen. And, you know, in the huddle, they go, oh, I got my guy. I got my guy. I got him. I own him. And, you know, and believe it or not, back when I played 79, 80, 81, the quarterback called the plays. There wasn't somebody running in a play every time because everything was option read. So what I'm saying is, based on the feedback I'm getting, you think AJ's checking off to this kind of stuff, saying, oh, I got my guy? Because I know when I played quarterback, we would find somebody we could whip, and I don't care. We'd run it down your throat 5-6 yards of carry every single time because we had the guys to do that. And that's what I'm saying. We're getting the feedback from what we're seeing on defense. Who are we on? And the coaches are seeing this. They're related. But I just feel like we have got with so much freaking speed. We got a toolbox, guys. We got a toolbox we can reach into and get that play when we need it. I'm just saying, when are we going to see it? I'm excited because I think we've got some good stuff up our sleeve.
Well, we'll see it when it's necessary. You know, I do think you're right in that AJ McCarron has enough command of the offense and the coaches have enough confidence in him that if McCarron reads the defense and sees that something will work, he can check to a different play. We've seen that even going back to the Ole Miss game, which is the first time I saw it really jump out at me last year. So there is that. If there's a matchup that works, they will run it and exploit it as they can. They don't really want to continuously do it because they want to keep trying to find weaknesses so they can maintain the offensive balance that Doug Nussmeier absolutely wants. Now, when are we going to see, you know, the trick plays, the flea flickers, or the halfback passes, or even different route trees? If what you're doing works, there's no reason to show that.
Amen.
That's exactly right.
Amen. I don't think you're going to see anything crazy until the Florida/Georgia game, guys.
Well, it could be LSU.
No. After watching those guys on Saturday night,
they got a good defense, though, Bert.
Dude.
I know the quarterback stunk, but they got a pretty good defense.
They had a good defense against Kyle
Frazier.
We're going
to get their best game. You cannot gauge what happened in Auburn with anything. And you, everybody in that's listening to this, that's followed that series, they just muck it up over in Auburn. They do. They just, I mean, it's crazy. But I will say this, we're going to get everybody's best game. We always get everybody's best game. They're going to get up for us because that's how they gauge themselves. I'm sorry, that's how they gauge their season. Oh, we did this against Alabama. Oh, because we're the gold standard right now. So we're going to get, it's going to be crazy. But I tell you what, I see so much confidence in AJ.
Yes.
I just feel like this offense is being held back.
Yep.
It's like a pack of mules, and they're just holding back because, like I say, they gripe when you throw the ball because they got something to prove because this unit is where I saw it, man. I'm talking about some beef trucks walking up to the line. I mean, it's just scary looking how big they are. And, you know, you look at the numbers, but when you see that physicality and you hear that pop and that grunt that close to the field, oh, dude, they are inflicting some pain. Our running backs inflict pain. I mean, we're in great condition. I just feel like this whole thing is about ready to explode on somebody. And I mean, we're putting up a lot of points. We could put up more, but, you know, we can't be perfect every play. But I just feel like we got the toolbox, we got the tools, we got the players. I'm just real excited. I think this is our season to lose. If we get beat, we're going to do it to ourselves. I don't think somebody – yes, people can scheme us, but we have got to execute, and we play our game, we're going to win. Amen.
Absolutely. If Alabama plays their best game, there's not a college football team in the country that can beat them.
I think that's fair.
Nobody.
State.
Nobody. I, you know, I think all four of us right now on this call absolutely agree with that. That it's at least I haven't seen it, and I'm watching a lot of college football, guys. I'm watching the replays. I'm trying to stay up.
Is
on the
there
Big
that
10.
Bigger gap, Gary? Is Gary? Are you on?
Yes, sir. Yeah, man. I'm
is
here.
That is there? Is there that bigger? You think there's it's us and everybody else right now?
No. I think LSU on the right night can beat us. What it's going to take, King, it's going to take Pornstash Jr., Mettenberger, is going to have a Garcia-type game like he did in Columbia that day against us. Or Carolina don't win that game.
I don't think he can do that.
Well, I didn't think Garcia could do it, Berg, but he did it.
Mettenberger
was
like
a scratch. You're exactly right. You know, somebody can get hot just like Garcia, man. That was his once-in-a-lifetime game. I mean, I'm sorry, it was. I mean, and he did what he had to do. He made the play. They were fired up. But Mettenberger, everybody's going, well, you know, what's going on with that? Maybe it's that freaking mustache. Have you seen that thing, man? He looks like Van Gorder's long-lost son or something.
He does. I think we should start calling him Mettenberger.
And listen, man, hey. Let me get off this thing. I just want to call in. I've been listening for about an hour. Enjoyed it. And I just want to say Auburn sucks and roll tide, y'all.
Roll tide, King,
roll
man.
Tide.
Thanks for the call, as always.
Thanks, buddy.
Next up, we've got Marty. Marty, I believe that's you. How about it tonight, man? Welcome to BAMS. Marty. 5456, caller.
Hey, am I there?
You're there.
Here.
We got you.
Okay, good deal. I was on mute. I'm sorry, man. Hey, I want to shout out to Crimson. Crimson's the one that got me to start calling in the show and listening to BAMS. You know, I have to got a lot of respect for Crimson there, man. He's got some good stuff tonight there. Hey, Kerry, is Kerry on?
Yeah,
man.
I'm just vibrating, waiting for that. Participating chart tonight.
Well, as your boy Trooper likes to say, I'm sitting on G waiting on O, buddy. All right, here we go. Alabama offense. Starter at left tackle was Cyrus Quanjo. Left guard, Chance Wormack. Center, Barrett Jones. Right guard, Anthony Steen. Right tackle, DJ Flicker. Tight end, Michael Williams. Quarterback, A.J. McCarron. Running back, Eddie Lacy. And they started three wide receivers, Kenny Bell, DeAndre White, and Christian Jones. On the defense, at one end was Ed Stinson. At the nose, Jesse Williams. Other end, Damian Square. Sam linebacker, Adrian Hubbard. Mike linebacker, Trey DePriest. Will linebacker, C.J. Mosley. Translation, Nico played, but he didn't start. Safety, Clinton Dix. Ha-ha got a start. Sinceri got a start. Milner got a start. Lester got a start. And Ballou got a start. So after starting two games in a row, Nick Perry didn't start. Played a lot, didn't start. Coming out the bench for Alabama. Walk-on special teams, the defensive back player, Randall Watkins. Bobby Williams' son, Nick, played some wide receiver late in the game. D. Hart played well at running back. John Fulton played some special teams and in the secondary. We talked about him earlier. White Lightning, Nathan McAllister, got in there at wide receiver, number 24. Punter Cody Mandel, one time, 29 yards. He didn't have to take a shower after the game. Tanae Francis, the linebacker. T.J. Eldon, the running back. Snapper, Carson Tinker. Kicker, Jeremy Shelley, quarterback, Blake Sims, receiver, Cyrus Jones, got his first catch, became the 15th different Alabama player to catch a pass this year in a game. Jeffrey Pagan, defensive end, Amari Cooper, receiver, played well again. Quentin Dial, defensive line. Philip Ely had a cameo at quarterback. Bradley Still, the corner. Kenyon Drake, another touchdown at running back. Reggie Ragland, back in the lineup on kickoff, and also a little bit at linebacker late in the game. Jonathan Atchison, linebacker. Jabril Washington in the secondary on kickoff. Geno Smith in the secondary on kickoff. Dylan Lee made his first appearance in a couple of games other than kickoffs. He got to play some linebacker. Landon Collins, special teams and safety. Nick Perry at safety. Denzel Duvall at jack. Kelly Johnson, who has some legal problems of his own, named in a lawsuit for a party in 2010 where he allegedly did some hazing for his fraternity, Sigma Chi, which has also been disciplined. So, some more will be coming out later about Kelly, I'm sure, but he's still practicing with the team. This incident occurred in 2010, so they may not do anything to him this year. Ben Howell, talked about him earlier, went back, also got in punt return team the whole game on the 34, kind of our Rudy. Nico Johnson at linebacker, Tyler Hayes, linebacker, special teams, Cade Foster, another good game kicking the ball, kickoffs and long field goals, LaMichael Manning on defensive line, Xavier at jack when they went base defense, Ryan Kelly at center, Ari Quanjo at guard, played well when he was in there. 99% sure Ari's your starter at left guard next year. Chad Lindsey at guard, Austin Shepard at right tackle. He'll battle Leon Brown in the spring for right tackle. Marvin Shinn at receiver. Marvin also played a little bit at tight end in certain sets, but he's truly a receiver. Danny Woodson Jr. at receiver. Harrison Jones at H-back. Kevin Norwood a little bit at receiver, but only a couple plays. He's fighting an injury. Brian Vogler at tight end. Got him a reception. Malcolm Faison, who is named after King Crimson Malcolm. He is the backup tight end. And Darren Lake at nose guard got some quality time, and he'll get a lot more quality time this year, this week, Marty, because of the injury to Brandon Ivory. So they played 69 guys. That is a season high so far, Marty. That is your participation chart, sir.
Man, that is awesome. I tell you what, you can only get that on BAMS Radio. There's nobody else in the country going to break that down like that.
You told
did
right.
A great job.
Appreciate it, man.
Hey, a couple of things I just want to mention tonight. You know, some of these young guys we got coming up, I just kind of been paying a little bit of attention to them. And Bama Bird, you, and Thomas, you weigh in on this too. You know, I'll tell you what, Reggie Ragland, man, that kid is physically a freak, is he not?
He's a he was very, very highly thought of coming out of high school, and he's only gotten better. To backtrack 1 second, Kerry, I believe you retweeted this today. Hasn't Alabama played more freshmen and sophomores than they have upperclassmen?
That is correct, Bob. One or two players. So we don't use the excuse we're young like people that are 1-3 do, but Alabama does have a fairly young team. They got some veterans at some key spots, like quarterback and center and free safety and places like that. But Alabama's got some young guys that are playing every game. And I don't remember the exact numbers. It was something like 33 upperclassmen and 34 underclassmen, something like that, that have played this year. But, yeah, they have played more freshmen, redshirt freshmen, and sophomores in games than they have juniors and seniors. That is a fact, Thomas.
Scary stat when you think about that. Well, anyway, to go back to Ragland, like I said, only gotten better, might be Alabama's next great linebacker. With all of the linebackers Alabama has recruited over the past 2 years, though, it could be, you know, it's kind of a grab bag. All of them are going to be excellent players. They are absolutely developing at an extremely fast rate, and they're going to be contributors very quickly. So even as the team looks excellent right now, the future looks very, very bright, particularly at the linebacker position for the Bama D.
And speaking of the future being bright, we're going to segue from this right into Legend Island. This previous 2 hours has flown by, guys. It's been a fun segment, and we have got the legend of college football on hold and ready to rock and roll. So, Marty, hang with us. I've got you on hold. I've got Legend coming up. You have got BAMS Radio about to shift gears over to the high priest of college football, the Legend.
Legend Island.
Legend Island.
Legend Island.
Legend Island.
Legend Island.
Legend Island.
The Mac Daddy of outlaw sports programs. If you want to talk Bama, Legend welcomes all island members with open arms.
Even if they are painted orange with feathers.
Join the ever-expanding crew of sports crazies who are regular visitors to the Legend Island. Every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday
night. On BAMS Radio. And now, it's time for Legend, I Legend,
I Legend, I Legend, I Legend.
Ah, yes. Ole Miss knows the end is coming soon. Yes, Bama Nation, you've been hearing it all night right here on BAMS Radio. There is a lot of reason to be excited. I'd say the main reason is Nick Saban. Yes, Nick Saban, people! Nick Saban can text on a phone or payphone. I love Nick Saban tonight. I love Nick Saban. Nick Saban can text on a payphone, Bird. I tell you, I'm excited about this Bama team. Excited to be on BAMS Radio tonight with Bama Bird and Thomas. What's up, guys?
Hey, man, how are you doing? Welcome to the island, to your island, and we appreciate you letting us hang around. And enjoy some of your camaraderie as we get into your unique view of college football.
Well, Bama Bird, it's just an honor to hang out with you guys, man. I tell you, I'm excited about what I've seen this past weekend. A workmanlike beatdown of Florida Atlantic, but I was impressed by what I see. Even though we finally gave up some points, I walked away from that game thinking that we were still head and shoulders above the rest of the country. And as Ole Miss comes to town this week, I got no doubt that we're going to handle Ole Miss and handle them well. What do you think, Bert?
I think that there is – I agree. And the little bit of trepidation that I have is just simply in the fact, legend, that they've got four quality running backs and they've got an absolute enormous offensive line. And what could rain on our parade on Saturday night would be some inopportune turnovers and ball control on their part, and it could make for an interesting game. But outside of that, if we play our version of ball control and we don't turn the ball over and we push them around like a bunch of rag dolls, which I think we can do, I think we outweigh, outgun, outman our O-line to their D-line. And I certainly look at their corners as far as being a bunch of Lilliputians. They're midgets. They are. They're like 5'10", 5'9", 175
like
pounds.
Like the chipmunk, but without talent.
Yeah, they wear their pads only so it makes them look bigger. It's not because they're big. So, bottom line is, it should go as scripted, but I will throw out that one cautionary thing that a couple of turnovers and some ball control, and we could be in for more of a white knuckler than I think people are expecting. So, that's it.
Yeah, and you can never take an opponent lightly. That's one thing about it.
Especially
an
SEC opponent.
Exactly. And the more and more I look at this team, though, I mean, this is A.J. McCarron's team. I mean, that guy's looking like Eli Manning back there in the pocket. I mean, I ain't seen a quarterback throw the ball like this at Alabama in a long time. And I want to get Thomas to jump in on it. Thomas, I love T. Have you seen a quarterback better than A.J. at Alabama in the last 10 years, brother?
In terms of touch – Brody Croyle, I will maintain, was one of the best 7-on-7 quarterbacks that Alabama's ever seen, but you put a line in front of him and he kind of falls apart. Andrew Zell probably had a little more arm strength because that guy could throw the ball 60 yards from his knees. But in terms of the total package, A.J. McCarron is probably the best quarterback in a very long time.
And, I'm so impressed. I really got him in the running for the Heisman. I mean, has the guy thrown an interception this year?
No.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, Alabama is the only team in the SEC and, one of nine in the country to have not thrown an interception.
And I think as time goes on, legend, I'm agreeing with you, and I hope not to burst any bubbles out there, but it's amazing to me that his numbers are so lofty, at least from a pass efficiency and where he sits with that there's not at least some mention of McCarron in these discussions of Heisman. And you know what? I love the kid from what's his name? Geno Smith. I think Geno is probably going to run away with it, and I think probably deservedly so. But A.J. is playing great ball. He is as composed and cool of a quarterback as I've seen under center for a long time. And you know what A.J. doesn't have in front of him that Brody did?
That line.
Chris Capps. And I hate to dog out Chris
That's
Capps.
That's funny as hell. That's what that is. That's true damn funny right there.
I did not come back from screening a caller, and you just mentioned the name Chris Gapps on the radio.
Yeah, I did.
Nightmares.
All right, guys. I'll tell you
Somebody
what.
Let's recruit for the man.
let's do this real quick, Legend, with your permission. I've got the Pelham Gator on with us. Can I bring him onto the island and pass him a bottle of suntan lotion?
Definitely. Bring CG on. It's an honor. It's an honor to have an undefeated Florida Gator on the show.
Man, you know, Gator, you have to be riding high right now. I mean, you have to be very proud of the turnaround that your team has made. I'm impressed. I got to tell you what, man, Muschamp has really, you can see the improvement week by week by week, and you guys are for real. I look at you as the dark horse to beat Georgia and win the SEC East and meet Alabama over in Atlanta. What do you think?
Man, you sound like the vampire Danny Sheridan. Man, well, we back or what?
Hey, that's some good stuff right there, brother. That is some good stuff.
I heard that. I heard you and Danny Sheridan. I heard him pick up to win the East with Phil Steele, Luganville. I don't know what it is, but the Jocks bunch can't pick crap. I hope they keep picking Kentucky's, Tennessee's, the Georgia's, and let Florida win. What do you guys really think? Do you think we're back?
I do. You know why? You've got some quality running backs. They've transitioned from having what I call the scat back type running back to guys that can carry the ball and take a licking and keep on ticking. And the second thing that Muschamp is bringing to the table is defense, my friend.
Oh, man, let me tell you, I think he's the next protege of Saban. We were getting that little doubt last year. Of course, we had that offensive coordinator, you know. I forgot his name. I'm glad we do forget him, but thank God he's over in Kansas. But
wasn't he in Star Wars? Didn't he play the part of Jabba the Hutt in Star Wars?
that's a good one. I got to remember that tomorrow, guys. I mean, I tell you what, I'm a little proud. I don't want to get too cocky because they claim Danielson thinks we got the toughest schedule in the nation. We still got a lot of big teams to beat, and we got Georgia and South Carolina back-to-back. So we'll see what we do against LSU. And if we can come out with that victory in the swamp, then I feel like we're for real. That we'll compete for the East.
I am projecting and predicting that I think Florida, and I looked at you as a dark horse coming into the season. Now after 4 or 5 weeks of play, I'm telling you, man, I'm feeling something special down there. I don't see the wheels coming off. I liked the way you manhandled Tennessee. You went into a hostile territory. You guys did exactly what you needed to do to win. And Tennessee is not a slouch. I mean, Tennessee is, if you don't wake up and smell the coffee, that young man they've got at quarterback will flat scald your ass. And
well, guys, we'll see how good Tennessee is this week. I think we'll get a real good picture of Tennessee and Derek Dooley. You think he'll last?
You know what?
This is it. If he loses to Georgia this week.
Now, you know what? I think they're competitive this year, Gator. I think that this year those guys are at least hanging and not embarrassing the program like they did last year. And I think that you can see that there is a semblance of a heartbeat in that program this year. And honestly, I think Tennessee fans are crazy if they run Derek Dooley off. I think he is onto something. I think he's recruiting some good kids. I think he's putting together the right type of program. And if I think they need to sit still and shut the hell up and let him do his thing for at least 2 more years. Yeah, and 2 years from now, we'll know. But right now,
But if he left, if they do get rid of him, wouldn't there be a good choice with Sincera there as defense coordinator and bring little Kirby Smart up there and wouldn't that be a pretty good staff starting right there?
Hell no! Dismissed. Those are bad boys.
You had to bring that one in. We're trying to dismantle your staff over there in Green Bay Packerland. You know, we would like to break up the Saban bunch because, I mean, we want to touch that again, you know. I'm glad we didn't play y'all in the fifth game this year. Thank God Mosley ain't breaking Brantley's ankle. But, guys, it's great to talk to you. Y'all got a great show. I wish I could hear you live. I'm driving a semi to Montgomery tonight. I wish I could hear you. This is all I get is on a phone. Sooner or later, you reach Pelham where I can hear you and I can be able to really enjoy you guys.
Hey, man, we appreciate you listening, and as always, you know, and I got to tell you, for a Florida fan, you're all right, because anybody who rides a motorcycle is a brother of mine.
Hey, brothers, I got two Harleys. I just got back into my house from the flood. Their bikes never got wet. They're still nice and sitting pretty. I'm ready to ride this weekend. I need a vacation. Hey, see you guys. See you, Hog Brother. Hey, Legend, see you, little Andrew Dice Clay lookalike. See you, buddy. All right, tell him Gator out.
That's PG, the famous PG from the opening drive. Tell him Gator. He's a Florida representative, and I have to agree with what Bird said. I kind of think Florida is the dark horse because traditionally they have owned Georgia. I mean, they just beat Georgia, and I think they're really good up front on defense. And I think the key to that team is that Jeff Driscoll has grown up a little bit, just enough for some of his talent to mature and for the Gators to kind of establish himself as a threat on offense because we got Gillespie, and the Bows and a couple of players, they have some guys, Gillespie, they have some guys that can really, really get it done offensively. So I kind of agree with you. You know, the East has shaped up, Bird, and I'd like to touch on this some tonight. The SEC East appears possibly to be stronger than the SEC West. Now, the West has the best team overall, but some people are whispering that the next three best teams may be in the SEC East.
There's no maybe to it, my friend. Legend, I got to tell you, all three of those programs are absolutely like vipers down in a burlap bag. You don't want to put your hand in, and you don't want to leave it there because you're going to get bit. And I'm telling you, Georgia is – I think for real, I'm going over to watch them play Tennessee this weekend. Oh, I'll know after this weekend. I think South Carolina's for real. I think they may be overrated. I don't think they deserve the lofty position they've got. But Connor Shaw's the real deal, man. I'm telling you. And with I'm getting, you know, some pushback on the Jadavian Clowney comment. I'm telling you, he has made enough of a difference on that defense that they are a force to be reckoned with, not on the Saban level and not on the Bama level, but they are more than respectable. And then the third team is, of course, Florida. And Florida is coming up under the whole mentality of Saban and the process and Muschamp and win it with D. Guys, you can see a little mini Alabama happening down in one of the most fertile recruiting territories in the United States, Florida. And you can see the swagger starting to come back, and the Gator Nation is starting to chomp again. Be aware, be wary. I mean, Florida could be our bump to the national championship. And, I hate to do the booga stick thing, man, but I may have to have a Bama vodka, to be honest with you, Legend. And speaking of Bama vodka, I'm going to get those boys on the air with us. We want to welcome them as a proud sponsor of Legend Island. And then folks out there listening, give us a call, 714-510-3707. We will be right back with Legend Island. You are listening to BAMS Radio.
You better get on the telegraph. We need Bama vodka fast.
Daddy, who's those scary-looking bottles riding into town?
That's Frenchie V and his gang.
Oh, what American vodka is there that can challenge a French-made vodka?
Who's that coming, Daddy, to save us?
Bama.
That's Bama Smooth American Vodka. 80-proof Bama vodka packs 6 distillations, and no one in the world can match his Alabama limestone filtration.
Oh, chocolate! Yeehaw! Look at those Frenchies scram!
We invite you to taste Bama vodka and judge for yourself. Who makes the best tasting vodka in the world? Bama Smooth American Vodka. Product of the USA, Solomon Spirits Corporation, Auburndale, Florida.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. with Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
That's called dead air.
We need some music like Five Bomb gets. We need that intro back in.
I'll give you all the music.
That was funny. That was funny anyway. I like that. I was waiting for you. You was waiting on me, and damn, they hit a home run over our head. It happens sometimes.
Speaking of home runs, and you all in the chat room are just going to have to deal with this, but the Yankees are still in front of the Orioles.
Hey, Burr.
Yeah, man.
Hey, let me tell you about a friend I met today, a great friend of mine, Adam. He was telling me he owns Ace Tree and Landscape, and he was telling me there's a chance that the trees at Auburn may still live. My boy is a certified arborist, and I want to tell you, this dude is like the Nick Saban of trees. What do you think right now? Do you think that the trees down there are not going to die that time that you urinated on them down there, that you have actually saved these trees now, Bird?
You know, it's one of those holy water things, Legend. You know that. I just sprinkled some holy water on them.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit about Auburn. That's what I was talking about. I want to shout out to my friend Adam, the owner of Ace Tree and Landscaping. And you want to check him out. If you ever have any needs in those areas, check my friend out. Tree removal, tree trimming, stump grinding, complete cleanup from the ground up. Ace Tree and Landscaping, 332-7757. But, hey, let me get back to the SEC East because I want to continue what you were saying, Bird. You was talking about those three teams, but of those three teams, does Florida have enough to really overcome Georgia and South Carolina? Now, I'd like to hear Thomas' view on this, too.
Thomas, I'm going to jump in. I really don't know yet. I mean, we've got a trifecta of games coming up over the next 3 weeks, and I think I'll know better by comparing Florida's performance playing Tennessee at Tennessee and Georgia's performance playing Tennessee in Athens. And it's going to give me, I think, enough of a barometer. If you ask me the same question next week, I might have a more educated answer. But until I'm able to kind of gauge, you know, against this one, against that one, and this home stadium, et cetera, I just don't have an answer for you tonight.
Can Florida take the East? It all comes down to Jeff Driskel. Florida struggled against Texas A&M when Jeff Driskel was sacked 8 times. Then Jeff Driskel was not sacked at all in the Tennessee game, and even though it was a close game for 2.5 quarters, Florida destroyed Tennessee through about halfway through the third quarter into the fourth. If Jeff Driskel continues to mature at the rate he's going, at Florida could absolutely win the East. Their defense is good enough, and Gillisley, their starting running back, is a power back with breakaway speed. So Florida could do it. I'm not as high on South Carolina as Bird is. I realize Connor Shaw has more toughness than most rooms full of, you know, people, but it just isn't – I'm not as convinced of them. Georgia, I'm still very high on. Georgia is probably the most complete team in the East, but for whatever reason, Mark Richt always manages to shoot himself in the foot once. And with how competitive the East is, one shot to the foot could knock Georgia out, just like it was the 2007 season where everybody had two losses and Georgia played out of their mind for the last 4 weeks. But it didn't matter because they'd already lost too much.
Well, it's we're going to find out. Again, I think there's a true litmus of exactly how good Georgia is coming up. And Daryl from Georgia, I know you don't listen to BAMS and our quality of our programming sucks, but bottom line is that
and I would tear him apart in a debate, but
yeah, don't get too excited, Daryl. I'm telling you, you've got a reckoning coming, and it's coming out of Gainesville, Florida, and it's called the Gators. And I agree with Thomas 100%. I think Mark Richt runs soft camps, and I keep saying soft camps cause cramps. I just don't know that they have. I don't think they've got the steam, legend, to make it to roll through to the end of the season, especially when you've got some quality opponents coming up, like a South Carolina, and like a Florida, and we're going to find out. And if they get through that gauntlet, then more power to them. I look forward to seeing the Dogs over in the Atlanta Dome, in December, and let's have a little throwdown over there, and then I can tell Daryl to kiss my ass yet again. But bottom line is we're going to find out. It's you got to play the game, and we can sit and as the pundits and the pontificators of the national media and on BAMS radio all day long and sit here and play second guess. But the proof's going to be in the pudding. We'll find out if it's chocolate or vanilla.
Two epic games in the SEC next weekend, and that is when LSU goes to Florida and Georgia goes to South Carolina. I think a lot of questions will be answered after those two epic games. Not looking ahead, I mean, the SEC schedule is not very much to look at this week, but kind of glancing ahead to those two big games, Georgia going into South Carolina. Bird, who would you throw your lot with at the moment in that game?
Is it at South Carolina, legend?
It's at South Carolina.
I'd have to take South Carolina. I think the home team is going to have an advantage on that one.
Thomas?
Georgia. I think South Carolina's weak offensive line will get destroyed over and over by Jarvis Jones. Marcus Lattimore is still a step slow coming off that ACL problem. He just hasn't looked very good. And I'm not sure Connor Shaw, as tough as he is, can do what he's done in two games, basically, and willed the team to win. I don't think his body will let him.
I think he's magic. I think Connor Shaw is magic. And he has got a little bit of Tim Tebow in him. I think he's actually a more talented quarterback than Tebow was. But he's got that ability to take a team, put it on his back, and let it ride him. And I'm going to tell you something else, too. I don't like Steve Spurrier more than I like a hole in my shoe in a rainstorm. But I'm going to tell you something. That boy can coach. And you're matching up Mark Richt, who I still call a soft coach, overrated, who should have been. His team ought to perennially be in the top five every year, every bloody year, with the talent that he's got around him. And I think he underprepares. I think there's a whole litany of things that Mark Richt is guilty of, and I believe Mark Richt will get out-coached in South Carolina. Mark it down.
Here's the interesting thing about that South Carolina team. I have to agree with Bird. If Connor Shaw plays the way he did the other day, that, to me, is a very, very dangerous team. Because when you look at them defensively with Delvin Taylor and Clowney on those ends, I mean, you're talking about two future pros, and then you put Kelsey Quarles in the middle. They got some nice linebackers over there with Shaq Wilson and Holman. And I just tell you, this is a team. All three of those teams in the East, to me, pose a serious threat all of a sudden, as Bird was saying earlier. It will not be no cakewalk, I think, this year in Atlanta. I think the SEC East will be a foe and a big-time ranked foe when we ride into Atlanta, I think, undefeated. Thomas, which of the three would you choose right now to be in Atlanta?
Ooh. I'm going to stick with Georgia because I don't know if Driscoll will mature to the point where Florida will be able to adequately challenge Georgia. The other problem is South Carolina gets LSU, as does Florida. So the road to Atlanta is a lot easier for Georgia than any other team.
As usual.
As usual.
Honest to God. I mean, you would think that Hostess Cupcakes is a sponsor of the frickin' Bulldogs, because every time I turn around, that's all you see is cupcakes with the Georgia Bulldogs.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because had Missouri and Texas A&M not come into the SEC, Georgia would be coming to Tuscaloosa in 3 days for a game.
Ooh, wouldn't that be epic?
Well, you know what? It would have crushed them. They would have gone down like a sack of cards. I see it as Alabama and everybody else in the country. There is not another team in the country that even sort of kind of matches up with what I see with Bama this year, period.
Hey, Bert, on that note, hey, you got to try out my boy down at Donuts Joe's. He gave me and Andy a bunch of donuts.
Where's that?
He's on Lee Street. You ever heard of it? You know, right past Home Depot, the County Road 52. Go down there and tell him the legend sent you down.
I will. Will he hook me up with some pregame donuts, you think?
Yeah, I know he will.
Does he have my favorite, the powdered kind with the powdered sugar on them, kind of like a beignet type thing?
Man, Donut Joe's make Krispy Kreme look like a minor leaguer, dude. hey, he's a fella. I also follow him on Facebook, but he hooked me and Andy up with about 50 donuts. Dude, I done put on 10 pounds. But, hey, I want to get Bird. Bird, of the three, which one would you say makes Atlanta? Are you sticking with the Gators? Is that your final answer?
Here's the thing, legend. And you know, I'm like everything else. Hell, I've got an opinion. They're like assholes and they all stink, you know. But what I'm seeing is an improvement in Florida every single week, not unlike what I'm seeing at Alabama. And as those guys improve and start believing in themselves, I see a very well-coached, fundamental team that builds their program around defense, that has shifted gears from the scat back type running back to more of a bruising type running back. And those are all recipes for success to me. And if they continue to improve, yes, I stick by the Florida Gators, seeing the Alabama Crimson Tide over in Atlanta in December.
And there again, you know, you kind of touched on it earlier. Well, when you look at that team with Dominic Easley, Omar Hunter, Sharif Floyd, I mean, you're talking about three defensive linemen that project to the next level. And with Bostic and Jenkins at linebacker and Elam and Evans, I mean, them guys got some talent on defense. And if they can get production, I mean, Jordan Reed, I mean, you got Trey Burden, I mean, you got Dunbar, Gillespie. I mean, you got playmakers. If Driscoll can pull the trigger over there, the only thing is Florida has to play LSU. And as we all know, the Puppies, and y'all heard Darrell say our broadcasting was bad. Hell, his calls are bad. Our broadcasting is excellent. It says he can't talk or hear, Bird. But Florida has to play LSU, and we all know that Georgia don't. So, again, these schedules are a little uneven, a little unfair, in my opinion.
I think Florida is going to beat LSU. I don't.
The pastor up in the church of college football.
My friend, I was so unimpressed by LSU last weekend, and I don't. You know what? I don't give two tinkers toots over whether you know they've got the booga booga stick on playing up in the plains in Auburn or not. That team was number one in the country, number two in the country. They didn't look like a number two team in the country to me. They looked like a number 25 team or even somebody that may have not even be rated. I mean, that was a mediocre beats less than mediocre program this past Saturday night. There was no redeeming value whatsoever. And so who was it on BAMS tonight, Thomas, that said, oh, they played a good defense? It's like, did you watch the same game I watched? You had.
I refuse to stick my name next to that claim.
I can't remember if it was you or Kerry, but somebody, I was like, you know what I watched? I watched the Statue of Liberty play, except he never did pull the ball back far enough to make it a trick. You had the Statue of Liberty, you know, running quarterback for the LSU Tigers. Mettenberger is a big stone statue, and you can say all you want about Jordan Jefferson, but at least Jefferson could stretch the play. His legs would allow him to stretch the play and occasionally make a play from that. And that's why, even though he sucked too as a QB, he got the play in time because he had the personnel around him. What we saw this past weekend is, A, Mettenberger cannot put a team on his back and carry him through. B, he has zero mobility, zero. C, he's got an arm like a cannon, but, you know, when you throw it 10 feet over your receiver, who frickin' cares? You got to have a touch to go with the cannon, and right now I wasn't impressed. There was nothing about LSU that impressed me, and LSU played good defense against who? Kyle Frazier and Auburn? Kiss my royal red butt. God almighty. Sorry, legend.
No, preach on, Pastor. Preach on, because, I mean, I wanted to jump in on SEC West some, and I just have to say, I thought the loss of Reuben Randall in their passing game was really going to hurt them. You know, when you look at Beckham and Landry and some of the guys that they've plugged in, big-time potential, but I just think they're the player that Randall was at wide receiver. And when you watch that LSU team, you always wonder, how in the hell do they win games? Because they have no imagination on offense. I mean, I really think the loss of the Honey Badger really hurts them, too. He was kind of the catalyst for that team, the emotional leader. I have to agree with you. I don't think this is a team, like you said, it should go all the way out of the rankings. But this is definitely a team and a program on the slide. And I have to ask, has Alabama done the same thing to LSU that they did to Miami years ago, that they did to the Florida program just a few years ago, that they did to the Texas program? Has Alabama sent LSU sliding back down the mountain off of the mountaintop bird?
Yes. I made that comment as I was leaving the Superdome, legend. I looked at Mrs. Bird and I said, that team just got Sabanated, and I said, they will never, ever get it out of their heads. And the guy that it most affected was Les, the Mad Hatter Miles. And if you're in the coach's head, you were in the team's head, and I'm telling you, they got Sabanated, and he knows in his heart of hearts that he snuck out with a win in Bryant-Denny last year on probably as bad a call for interception reception as we saw on Sunday night with the NFL refs with the Green Bay game and the Seahawks. Folks, I'm here to tell you that I think LSU and Les Miles absolutely know that they are never, ever, ever going to see the pinnacle of what they had and where they were ever again, because they were supposedly last year, legend, the greatest football team of all time in 2011.
The greatest.
That's all I heard from people like Tim Brando and
like Michael Spink.
And all of them. I mean, you Herbie. I mean, everybody was on that LSU bandwagon. And I thought to myself, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. And then what a bubble was burst down in January in the Louisiana Superdome. Gator bait or tiger bait, our house. You know what? I haven't heard any of them loudmouths since then.
You know, LSU not only played Florida next weekend, but then they get South Carolina at home the week after. A nice little interesting two-game stretch starting next weekend for LSU. who basically has went through North Texas, Washington, Idaho, Auburn, and this week will play the mighty Towson team. I mean, who the hell is Towson? Is that like a Division 12 team or something?
Nah, man, you should know who Towson is. They're up there, and you're back in your
That's
hometown.
That's Maryland, ain't it? It sure is.
They're
it
up
sure
there
is.
In Towson, Maryland, which is a suburb of Baltimore. Pretty little campus. It almost looks like Samford's campus here in Birmingham. Lovely little campus, lovely little school, lovely little football program. Somebody, I guess, was smart enough to look at the schedule this year and say, we really need a bunch of pussies to play this weekend. And that's what they got with Towson, you know?
I totally agree with you. Thomas, to get your view on this, you see this LSU program sliding down the mountain, brother?
I see it a little bit. Losing the Honey Badger was, even though not a great cover corner, was an emotional leader for the team. I mean, he, without the punt return for Arkansas and the punt return against Georgia, I'm honestly not sure LSU wins either of those games because the team was flat. The problem for LSU is, Bird already mentioned it, Zach Mettenberger is just not mobile, and the loss of Chris Falk means that the offensive line is being constantly shuffled while they try and fix it. You never really replace a Chris Falk. You can put someone there in his position, but he's good enough to where you're going to definitely have some drop-off, and you're seeing that. Dee Ford and Corey Lemonnier for Auburn terrorized Mettenberger. I did get to see that game, by the way, and I was so woefully unimpressed with what Mets did. When a quarterback is getting sacked, he's told to tuck the ball in. Mettenberger just had it out. That's why he fumbled. It's not a good situation for LSU. Their defense is still strong. Sam Montgomery and Barkevious Mingo will be drafted early in the NFL draft. So, and they have defensive tackles that can go just as well. So their front four is astoundingly good. But with rebuilding their offensive line, their bread and butter is, LSU's bread and butter is running the ball. Rebuild offensive line, don't block as well. Problem. Passing situations come in. Zach Mettenberger can't move. He can't extend plays. A team tees off, and you have to pray that he can find a hot route. And LSU has no big possession receiver.
Nope.
There is no Terrence Tolliver
nope.
or Brandon LaFell or
nope.
Reuben Randall.
Nope.
They're all little fast guys that
yep.
are excellent slot receivers or outside burners, but there's no guy that I want you to go 5 yards that way, cut in 3 yards, and stand there. I'm going to throw it into the stratosphere, and your job is to go get it, take a hit, and come down with it. LSU does not have that from any of their players this season.
Wow.
You're listening to Legend Island tonight on BAMS Radio. And I'd like to tell Bird about something that BAMS Radio has been invited to. It's the Beham Wings Fest in October. And Bird, I already have someone that I want to nominate. And I want you to check this place out. They know about BAMS. It's Wing Out Sports Grill on 3rd Avenue South, 2417. My friend Derek over there, he's also giving me a song for Alabama that I got to get downloaded to you this week so we can play on Legend Island. It's bad. But this dude has the best wings I've ever eaten over at the Old Grumps location. And I want to nominate him for this Birmingham Wing Fest. We've been invited to this thing. And it's all the wings places in Birmingham is going to have a competition, and they're going to have a big trophy and everything. But get ready in October because BAMS Radio is going to be eating a lot of wings.
I love
the Wing Fest.
We've been invited,
so we're going to have a table there, and maybe we can get in on the judging or something on that thing. But I'm voting for Wing Out Sports Grill when it happens. but hey, let me ask you this. Continue on in the SEC West. How real is Mississippi State?
We're going to find out. Legend, that's a team that I'm looking at with a little bit of a jaundiced eye, and it goes back to the team that I watched play Auburn. And in all reality, I haven't seen them play since, but I got a Mississippi State fan very upset with me on Twitter because I kind of called them out too and said, you know, these are two very mediocre teams playing each other, and she was ready to come unglued on me saying, oh, well, we'll see you in Alabama. And I said, yes, ma'am, you sure will. You may not like what you see, but we will see you in Alabama when you guys get ready to come over here. I think that they are playing to the limit of their potential of what their athletes will allow them to do, legend, and I think that that's not anywhere near what Alabama is. Alabama will beat Mississippi State on their worst day on Mississippi State's best day.
I agree with that. Thomas, who is the third best team in the West, bro?
The remaining five are all terrible after Alabama and LSU. I'm sorry. I don't particularly. I'm with you.
I, you know, Thomas, you're absolutely 100% right. It's, I mean, the SEC West this year is a tragedy. It's a comedy and a tragedy at the same time. It's a Greek tragedian play. You know, they just.
And that's what I wanted to bring out right there, Pastor Bird, and you listen to the Church of College Football. Goes back to my original question. Is the East overall stronger than the West this year?
Oh, hell yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There's no questions about it. Missouri is a travesty. You know, outside of Missouri, I mean, even Vanderbilt's not that great, but you've got three quality programs in the East, and you have to respect all three of them. And then Tennessee is no slouch. They're not championship caliber, but I'm telling you, Tennessee, when you match them up against other teams outside the SEC, is playing pretty good football, and they're beating people the way they should beat people from the SEC do. So, you know, in all reality, legend, I think that, you know, it just the SEC West, and I'm telling you, I don't think it's – I disagree with it, that putting LSU and mentioning them in the same breath as Alabama. I think LSU is grossly overrated, and I mean stupidly overrated, and I felt that from day one. And then after watching them play a couple times this year, it's like, nah, I'm not worried about you guys. I'm not going to lose a minute of sleep over the purple and gold.
Tyler Bray this past weekend, 27 for 43, 401 yards and four touchdowns. Also has a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL draft in Justin Hunter, who hauled in himself in that game, 8 passes for 115 yards. I mean, I have to agree with you. The Bray to Hunter combination kind of bring back some of the glory days when Tennessee – used to all the time have great receivers and great – I mean, that's what Tennessee was known for back in the day, the Galloways. I mean, I remember Tennessee always had a fast receiver that could just run away from people. Who was the one that played with the Cowboys? He was on the opposite side of Michael Irvin. Go old school. I can't think of his name.
Oh, man, you're killing me now, and I know exactly who you're talking about. He was an all-pro. He was an all-pro wide receiver.
I can't think of him. That's a good question for the chat room. Who was the wide receiver opposite of Michael Irvin during the glory days that played at Tennessee? I remember Peerless Price. I mean, they used to always have great receivers. But I don't know if I can agree with that Dooley is the answer. Maybe he deserves more time, but...
Yeah,
I mean, that Tennessee program, that's a monster, Bird. I mean, that's a monster.
We went from last year burning him in effigy to this year a maybe, and I think that's an improvement. So, again, I would caution the Tennessee fans to basically sit tight and see what happens with that program. I see improvement up there. I hate their guts, but... and God, legend, I've got to sit right smack dab in the middle of Tennessee alumni this weekend. And my buddy that's getting the tickets told me, says, Bird, please don't wear Alabama gear, because he says, you know, there will be a riot. So you know damn good and well what I'm wearing to the Tennessee game.
Alabama gear.
Receiver, you're asking about Alvin Harper. Alvin Harper,
who
anybody?
It?
Alvin Harper.
Yes, it was Harper. Alvin Harper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy now.
Brian Flowers makes a comment from the chat room. UT got track stars and taught them how to catch. And you know what? You were right, Brian.
Sure did.
They sure did. I mean, you're too young to really remember that, but honest to God, that's what they would do. They would get kids from off the track team and show them how to catch a dadgum football, and they had some speed to burn. And they you know, they were good on defense back going to the Reggie White days, and you know that Tennessee had a proud program flying along. So I'm telling you, I think that Dooley is the guy to get them to where they want to be. Now, will he be the guy to take them to national prominence? That's a good question. I don't know.
I'm
it may be.
Predict,
do what?
I'm gonna predict that Dag Dooley is Tennessee's Mike Shula.
That's I was gonna say that just then. Yep.
He's going to be the coach that kind of heals the bridge enough for a superstar coach to walk over it and succeed the kind of way that Saban did at Alabama. Because Mike Shula, he wasn't the greatest of coaches, but he did serve a purpose when you look back at the history of the Alabama program. He was a healing ointment, I think, upon the program that enabled us to go in the right direction.
I'm going to bring up something.
Oh, Lord, I started preaching like a bird.
Yeah, you said it like me, man. But I watched a program on ESPNU last night that was a documentary about Sylvester Croom. And I thought it was a very well put together program. And I've always been a Sly Croom fan, and for a lot of reasons. I've always respected him. You know, hell, he beat us 2 years in a row, and he took a complete crap hole of a program and made them at least somewhat respectable. And then, you know, kind of outed Mike Shula. And I think it was because of Sly Croom that was one of the big reasons that Shula got the boot. But, you know, there was some controversy today on Feinbaum that one of the callers called in and said, you know, basically he's a racist and his family was racist and, I mean, just some really horrible things. What did you guys listen to any of that? And number one, I don't know if you got a chance to see the documentary. Kind of check your schedules if you get a chance to. I thought it was well put together. Number two, I don't think there's a lick of credence to anything this guy called in on Feinbaum today about. I mean, I look at Sly as one of the finest guys I've ever seen. I like him as a coach. I don't think he's a great coach, but I think he's a very, very, very good coach. I think he's a fine human being. And to call him and his family racist was completely out of line today.
Well, to answer your question, we had Paul Tripoli on earlier, and Mr. Tripoli gave us a pretty good sense of who and what Bear Bryant is. If Sly Croom is that, I don't see how he's racist and whatever, which I don't believe, but if he is this racist guy, that mindset does not match up with the Bear Bryant ethos that Mr. Tripoli described. And I am unwilling to believe that Bear Bryant would have put up with something like that on his teams. So I think that's just bogus and somebody trying to stir the pot and kick up what is obviously a very sore issue in the South when it brings up anything racial. So I would dismiss that as someone just being ignorant and trying to kick a angry bee's nest.
Mm. Yeah, I've actually met Sylvester Croom and always found him to be a gentleman. And even when he was passed over from Mike Shula, I mean, he handled that situation with a lot of integrity and a lot of class. So, I mean, any moron can say anything. That's the one thing about talk radio. That I mean, I guess it has its benefits and its withdrawals, back draws too, you know. But hey, before we get out of here tonight, I want to tell you about my friend Dennis at Backwoods Guns and Ammo.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. I saw Puffy at the tailgate, and he asked me, he says, Bird, when is Legend going to take you up to Backwoods Guns and Ammo? And I said, I don't think it exists. I said, you know, all I've heard, and I said, you know I love hunting, and you know I love guns, and you know that I'd love to come up and meet you guys, but, you know what, tell me more about this place so I can at least sort of feel like it's for real, Legend.
Well, you can go to Backwoods Guns and Ammo at yahoo.com, and that's Backwoods GunsAndAmmo at yahoo.com. It's up on Highway 43, 6595 Highway 43, Spruce Pine, Alabama. You can call. Also, you can call Dennis at 256-332-4860. Backwoods Guns and Ammo. I've been up there and checked it out, Bird. I'm going back in October.
If you want to,
make the trip with me in October.
As a matter of fact,
they have a radio station right next to the Guns and Ammo, and I've been invited to sit in for a few hours on the radio that morning. So maybe me and you can go up and spend some of the day up there. They also have a bunch of horses and things up there. I think you would really like it.
I would love to actually, and I'm kind of busting your balls a little bit on your own show.
I know, I love it. Hey, I also wanted to tell you and let folks know that Robert is in Alabama, and I am supposed to meet with him tomorrow, if you like to call me and get in on that. And he'll also be down on the quad on Saturday tailgating. So I'm going to meet Robert from Iowa in the morning, possibly at the stadium. They're going to give him a tour of the stadium, Bird, like they did Daniel. You got for Daniel that time.
Right.
So Robert's going to be down at the stadium about 11 o'clock in the morning, Robert from Iowa. So he is in town, and I'm going to get him at the BAMS tailgate and everything on Saturday for a while.
Let's give me a call tomorrow, Legend, because I need to do a little bit of reconnoitering with you on that. And you know what? While we're mentioning some of our fine sponsors, WorkPlay has got just a terrific lineup this weekend. They got Chris Robinson Brotherhood down there on the 27th. It's Thursday. They got the Flow Tribe on Friday. But the important thing for you guys to know about is A Night to Believe, Nashville Songwriters hosting an event to benefit transplant program at Children's of Alabama. A terrific benefit. Please go down. That's Tuesday, October the 2nd at 8 p.m. Go down to Work Play. Enjoy a wonderful evening in a terrific atmosphere. You will not be let down, and especially on this particular one, A Night to Believe, where the songwriters are hosting that event to benefit that transplant program of Children's Hospital of Alabama. So.
Yeah, and Tommy Williams, my friend down there, he also has the NFL ticket on Sunday now for all you NFL lovers. That is the place. That is where I'm going to go and hang out on Sunday to watch my games and bets, whatever. And Tommy, just a great place. Like Bird said, Work Play voted the number one music venue in the Birmingham area, one of the top places in Alabama, a must-see. And I'm glad Bird poured it out tonight. Man, I'll just tell you, I've enjoyed hanging out with you guys tonight. It's been fun. It's been refreshing. I mean, we just talked football, and time has just flew by.
Yeah, first 2 hours the same way, Legend. Between Thomas and Kerry, I just sat back and just was amazed at some of the stuff they were bringing to the party this evening. It was a fun show, and again, I was trying to throw a curveball at Thomas. We had Paul Tripoli Trip on with us tonight, and I threw Thomas, I thought, a curveball. I said, okay, you know, give me his stats. And Thomas sat there and kind of went, well, and within about 6 seconds, he goes, yeah, he was 6 foot tall and 195 pounds. It was like, God almighty. The Rock. Thomas the Rock.
Just call me Ted Williams because I hit everything you throw at me.
Call me Ted Williams. Another deal from Tuscaloosa. We're going to have to freeze Thomas's head, too, when it's all said and done. Freeze his head. That plane must go on.
As a real quick kind of update, guys, BAMS Radio is proud to sponsor Steve Skipper's latest painting that will be going into the Bryant Museum. And I'll let you know details, but we will be down there for that when it goes into the painting. It's the Trent Richardson painting. I'm hoping that Trent will be in for that. If he is, then, of course, Legend, you and Rock would be invited along. But anyway, it's a proud sponsorship for me, for a good friend and an absolute wonderful artist, Steve Skipper. And I can walk down now to the Hall of Fame Museum, Bear Bryant Hall of Fame, and say, look, that painting was sponsored by BAMS Radio right there.
And I tell you what, that dude is just straight butter. I mean, I've looked at some of his paintings, and I just have to tell you, I mean, he's in the same class. I hate to say it because I like Daniel Moore, but he's in the same class as Daniel Moore. I mean, this guy is one of the best I've ever looked at.
Yeah, anointedhomesart.com is where you would find his stuff. And we got 60 seconds left, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you tell everybody goodbye while I run our pretty music. How about that, Legend?
That'll work. And love you, Bird. Love you, Thomas. Appreciate everything you're doing, brother. Hey, I'm going to give a shout-out tonight to my friend over at Cafe Forenza, 110 Memphis Plaza, Highway 280, my boy Yance over there. Cafe Forenza, the place to go on Highway 280 where all the stars hang out. Bama Nation, get excited. Ole Miss this week. Y'all know what time it is. We're headed to number 15, baby. Check it out right here on BAM's Radio every Wednesday, every Thursday night, and now on Sunday night, BAMsRadio.com, 714-510-3707. Love you, baby. RTR, see us down on the quad on Saturday. Come check out BAM's Radio 10.
Lock and load,
boys. Oh, yeah.